Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Is it Monday already? Mercifully, yes, it is. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, a little something we like to call conversation radio, and we begin another broadcast week. Naturally, with Monday. So there's some program announcements coming. Not this week, but next week, I'll be on the road. However, this time being on the road doesn't mean that I'll be off the air. I'll be traveling to Washington, D.C. for a couple of days. Okay, I'll be off the air Wednesday. But Thursday and Friday, we will have broadcasts from a hotel whose name escapes me. But the organization does not. It's Families USA, and they are a very good group. Rather one of the best group advocates for single-payer health care and health care for all Americans that D.C. has. And they have kindly invited me, along with a number of other folks, to participate in Radio Row there. So we'll have 2 days of broadcasting live from D.C. with a host of interesting guests. And I think you'll enjoy it. Rick Smith will be there as well. And I'll be live from noon to 3. Rick Smith, I'm not sure how the schedule's going to work out exactly, but here's the upshot. Guy James will be joining us there. I'm really looking forward to seeing Guy again. He's always a pleasure, always a joy to be around, and just broadcast pro, and, you know, there's just, I don't know, I think there's a little chemistry there as far as two guys behind the microphone yammering at each other. So he'll do a couple of hours, I'll do 3 hours. We'll rerun the broadcast in the normal 6 p.m. slot, but I think we're going to have, three and three is six and two is... Oh, look, I'm doing math. If Bob has 3 hours and Rick has 3 hours and eight... If Bob has 3 hours and Rick has 3 hours and Guy has 2 hours, how many hours a day does the Horn have? And if they have 2 days, how many hours of broadcasting total will there be on that Thursday and Friday? See, that's basic math like they teach in, you know, third grade. Which brings me to yes. That's right, it's Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry, 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 step right up. You will not believe your ears. Step right up and peer behind, well, listen, behind this thin veil of cybernetic striped canvas, where you will find right-wingers, wingnuts, Republicans, conservatives, teabaggers, and what else? Militiamen, skinheads, white nationalists, and all the various and sundry freaks of the American right wing. Ladies, watch your purses. They sometimes do reach out and try to go for your cash. No children will be admitted, and no one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. You can't tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that tells the morons. You just can't tell them much. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. You're just going to love the way that I led into that once you realize where I'm going. I got this story from a couple of folks, and I knew immediately upon reading it that it had to run to the absolute front of the class. See, I'm dropping little Easter egg hints all along the way. It had to run to the front of the class for Moran Monday. Although we've got a what I like to call a cornbread twofer for this Moran Monday episode. But Lord, I mean, really, honestly, this is one of those stories that begins, Jesus criminy, it's 2012. It is 2012, yeah, 2012. Sherman didn't set the Wayback Machine, and it's 1864 or anything. We take you to Gwinnett County, Georgia, which is to Georgia what Orange County is to California. In modern education, there are attempts to sort of cross-cultivate among the disciplines. For instance, the old way of doing it, whereby one needed certain mathematical abilities in order to take, say, physics and chemistry, so therefore, no, you don't use it, no, now we like to use our mathematics in social studies and use our social studies in mathematics. That's what was going on at Beaver Ridge Elementary School in Norcross, Georgia. Beaver Ridge Elementary School. Where lots of little children go to school. It is what it is. And they go there for edumacating. And they gotta learn their gazentas and their cipherins. And apparently they have to learn social studies too. And this was according to Gwinnett County School Board School District spokeswoman Sloan Roach. Sloan Roach said that what they've been doing is teachers were attempting to incorporate social studies into math problems. That's all it was, trying to incorporate some social studies into math problems to make the math more real. How did they do that? Well, let's... Christopher Braxton has a child at Beaver Ridge Elementary School in Norcross. Christopher Braxton is a participatory parent. Helps his kid with homework and so forth. So they're sitting down to do the math. You know, the reading questions in math are always the tough ones. I remember how they drove me crazy in eighth grade algebra with, you know, one train leaving Chicago and another train leaving Poughkeepsie and what about the train that left from New Orleans? And, yeah, you get the point. You got to sort out all that stuff. The reading, we called them word problems back then. The word problems were always challenging because the numbers weren't already just plopped down there in front of you. You had to do some critical thinking to figure out what you wanted to plug in where. Well, they were doing word problems at Beaver Ridge Elementary School in Norcross, Georgia. And here are a couple of the questions. I guess, it's third grade. And by the time you get to third grade, that's where you start working on your ciphering and your gazentas. You're multiplying and you're dividing. And this would appear to be a division question. In more ways than one. Everybody got your pencil and paper? You ready to go? Each tree had 56 oranges in Gwinnett County, Georgia. I'd think they would be peaches, but who am I? I mean, if you were going to make this about social studies, maybe you could talk about the Georgia agricultural industry and its world-famous peach crop. But no, this is oranges. Each tree had 56 oranges. If 8 slaves picked them equally, then how much would each slave pick? I'm not pulling your leg. That is a really, no kidding, honest to God, really and for true word problem from the third grade class at Beaver Ridge Elementary School in Gwinnett County, Norcross, Georgia. Do we have our answer yet? Each tree had 56 oranges. If eight slaves pick them equally, then how much would each slave pick? Have we gotten our answer yet? Right. None, because we don't have slavery in the United States. Well, see, Bob, that's what they're supposed to say, because it's a cross-curricular activity. Each tree had 56 oranges. If eight slaves picked them equally, then how much would each slave pick? Can we have a moment? This is odious. This is horrifying. This is disgusting. But it's also bad problem writing, because we don't know how many trees there are, and we don't know how many fruit pickers. Can you imagine the process by which Mrs. Thimblethwack came up with this cross-curricular question? I mean, just sit down. I mean, no, us, it's the horn, right? I mean, this is a nightly conversation. And I want to see if we can do some sort of at-a-distance forensic reconstruction of the thought process that winds up with this on a desk in front of a little black child in third grade at Beaver Ridge Elementary School. Okay, so I want to come up with 56 divided by 8 equals question mark. Now, what can I ask them about? What can we have 56 of? How about oranges? Well, but we all the time, you know, I grew up like that. You know, if you have 56 oranges and you've got 8 people, and how many oranges does each person get? That's not very interesting. Let's have on the tree, and the children can draw pictures of the orange tree, and they can draw 56 little, they can get their Crayolas out, and they can draw 56 little orange dots for the, yes. And then what are we gonna do with, I know, we can have slaves pick the oranges. So if we have 56 oranges on the tree and 8 slaves pick them equally, then how many would each slave pick? Let me fire up the word processing. I think I'm going to get Teacher of the Year for this one. But it wasn't just that. There were more math problems, word problems. If Frederick got 2 beatings per day, how many beatings did he get in 1 week? Well, it depends on how many oranges he picked, ma'am! No, that's really a question. That is really, really a question from the third grade math homework at Beaver Ridge Elementary School in Norcross, Georgia. And notice the slave's name. Apparently in Gwinnett County, they're still a little bit pissed off about that little dust-up 150 years ago. The slave's name is Frederick. It's not Fred. It's Frederick. Can you think of a former slave by the name of Frederick who had some unkind things to say about whitey owning black folks? Because I can. Frederick had 6 baskets filled with cotton. If each basket held 5 pounds, how many pounds did he have altogether? Sloan Roach from the Gwinnett County School District. She said, this is simply a case of creating a bad question. And there's lots of questions about how much a slave can pick, and oranges and cotton. Marty asking, are you sure those trees weren't in the Marianas Islands? Oh, no, no, those, no, 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 Marty, those are orange trees in good old Gwinnett County, Georgia. Holy mackerel. You know me, I'm generally an advocate of public education. But there's something about this where you kind of go, you know what? I think teacher needs to be fired. Or if she's 50 or so, and I'm all for working people and everything, but she needs to, I don't know, maybe go teach in a little white Christian school where she can teach about slaves picking cotton. Because after all, that's why the white Christian schools got started in the first place, because, you know, the coloreds, that Supreme Court, that unelected Supreme Court, that radical activist Supreme Court. You realize the first time the words activist Supreme Court ever were uttered was with Brown versus Board of Education, right? That activist Supreme Court wants to make the colored children go to school with our good little white children. Quick, let's form a private school under the auspices of our church, and we'll set the tuition so high that the coloreds can't come here. Sounds really goofy, but it's true. That's how that was always, and before integration, there were also good white little Christian academies. I get the idea. I get the idea that the devil didn't go down to Georgia. The devil's been there and never left. Jim offering some mathematical wisdom. A theorem, Jim's law. The angle of the dangle is directly proportional to the mass of the ass and inversely proportional to the heat of the meat. I'm thinking we don't want to hand that one out to the third graders yet, Jim. Now, Ron in Raleigh is in the spirit of things. How about, how many whippings did the overseer administer to those lazy orange pickers to make sure they didn't slack off? Now, see, Ron, you got the same problem the teacher in Gwinnett County, Georgia did. We need some data in there. We can't formulate a proper question without enough. No. We need to find out how many times Frederick got beaten for wanting his freedom. Terrence Barnett spoke to WSB-TV. He said, something like that shouldn't be embedded into a child of the third, fourth, fifth, any grade. I'm having to explain to my 8-year-old why slavery or slaves, or beatings, are in a math problem. That hurts. Sloan Roach said, we understand that there are concerns about these questions, and we agree that these questions were not appropriate. You see, you can't have this question. You can't have questions like this unless you have a sort of latency of bigotry and prejudice within one's culture. I would hazard to guess that it would never enter the mind of, say, a public school teacher in Bellevue, Washington. Even if that teacher wanted to include cross-curricular social studies information, it would never enter the mind of the teacher to make that cross-curricular social studies information slavery, picking fruit, or cotton, or beatings administered to a slave named Frederick Douglass. If Frederick got 2 beatings per day, how many beatings did he get in 1 week? Answer? undeterminable because Frederick probably died on day three. Because a beating was not a spanking. No, you know, the remedy to bad speech is more speech. So I suggest, and feel free to use the email address for this. Let's come up with some questions, some math, some word problem questions for teachers in Gwinnett County, Georgia. I'll offer up the first one. 16 Christian fundamentalists have only 8 magic crackers to save their souls. How many Christian fundamentalists are going to hell? Answer: only the ones who think about voting Democrat. Now, I'm going to leave the rest of them up to you. But like I said, it's a cornbread twofer. And we will just move a little bit to the west. We're going to go over to Marengo County, Alabama. And this story really ought to be, and I got this via Matt Osborne over at OsborneInc.com. It was his morning awful. This story really needs to go national. And hopefully it will. In the state of Alabama, there is a creepy cracker, pasty-faced, doughy white man by the name of Paul Reynolds. Now, I am not kidding you. I am not exaggerating or expanding upon or dramatizing when I tell you that Paul Reynolds is a member of the Republican National Committee. And he does a bunch of RNC fundraising. In fact, he told one group, I need feet on the ground. We need to raise $300 million. You know, to get that one out of our White House. Well, Paul Reynolds recently went to the Marengo County Republican Executive Committee meeting. Also present was a reporter from the Marengo Democrat Reporter. Yeah, the name of the newspaper has nothing to do with its political philosophy. It could have just as easily been the Marengo Moral Volcano and Battle Cry of Freedom, okay? But a reporter was there from the Marengo Democrat Reporter. And that reporter faithfully took down the following words. Paul Reynolds said to the assembled Repiglicans there that he has, quote, no doubt President Barack Obama is a Muslim, and he is working to put America in a Reichstag moment situation. Let's go through that again. No doubt President Barack Obama is a Muslim, and he is working to put America in a Reichstag moment situation. Oddly enough, Paul Reynolds was silent some 11 years ago when 19 mostly Saudis flew planes into buildings in New York and Washington, D.C., and created a Reichstag situation for George W. Bush, which he wasted no time in capitalizing on. And you know, of course, Reichstag, what he means by Reichstag situation, Reichstag moment, he's referring to the Reichstag fire and the follow-up in which Nazis all over Germany, and Adolf Hitler in particular, screamed that this is the work of a communist. Now, if this was just some teabagger out somewhere, I wouldn't I'd say, well, forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown. But it's not. This man, Paul Reynolds, really, really is a full-fledged, card-carrying member of the Republican National Committee. Not just some babbling drunk at the end of the bar. When this man speaks, he speaks for the body known as the Republican National Committee. So it's not just Paul Reynolds said, no doubt President Barack Obama is a Muslim and he is working to put America in a Reichstag moment situation. For all intents and purposes, the Republican National Committee said, no doubt President Barack Obama is a Muslim and he is working to put America in a Reichstag moment situation. The Republican National Committee said that. Now, after reading this early on over at Matt's site, I clicked around just to check it, just sort of spot checking along the way, and I found no mention anywhere on any of the for-profit media channels coverage of the fact that a member of the Republican National Committee said, no doubt President Barack Obama is a Muslim, and he is working to put America in a Reichstag moment situation. Crickets. What he means, of course, is that he thinks he's a Muslim, and he's trying to figure out a way to suspend the Constitution. Because that's what happened after the Reichstag fire. By what means? Because I don't... But that's what we're in for the next... Oh, Jesus. 11 months. Just slightly less than 11 months. A sitting member of the Republican National Committee compared the President of the United States to Adolf Hitler. One state away, third graders are being taught that slaves pick oranges. In regard to the latter, perhaps it's kind of a realistic approach because the folks who do pick our oranges aren't very much elevated above slaves. They are wage slaves. They have little in the way of rights. Ron and Raleigh asking, didn't you know? I'm sure you're aware that the slaves of the Old South were happy in their servitude and loved their masters and mistresses. They would toil in the fields singing those Negro spirituals as happy as can be. Oh, Miss Scarlet, I don't know nothing about birthing no babies. Marty offering a word problem for Georgia teachers. What would you call 500,000 fundamentalist Christians at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean? Answer, a huge fine for violating the Clean Water Act. Or, I don't know, but I feel sorry for any fish desperate enough to have to feed there. Or, I'll add the one that'll get us in trouble, a good start. Then again, what would you call 500 fundamentalist Republic, 500,000 fundamentalist Christians? The radical wing of the tail wagging the dog of the Republican Party. There's that too. If you consider both of these questions, however, it really is sort of oniony, and I don't mean in the way of funny. I mean, oniony in the way of having layers upon layers upon layers. Because there's not just how does this enter the mind of someone to use this as a teaching tool for third graders, and there's not just how does a person with that much obvious racism and bigotry get to the head of the Republican National Committee. There's also the question in the case of Alabama, well, silence is acceptance, isn't it? And in the case of Georgia, not suspending or preferably firing the teacher who came up with those loaded questions, that's a form of acceptance too, isn't it? And this, of course, comes within the atmosphere of all of those anarcho-randians, POSs, who maintain that all schooling for the masses should be in an area that gives them a skill for the marketplace. Well, son, what you see, you got that question right there, son. That means you're going to be very, very good in the orange picking business, or maybe at the greengrocer's where you can divide the oranges out of their crates. And that's how we wind up with school systems where music, the arts, critical thinking, all of those things go by the wayside because they might teach little Susie and little Timmy and little Cindy and little Johnny to question authority, which is the very bedrock of the existence of the right wing. Blind obedience. This Paul Reynolds cat in Alabama who said, you know, he didn't say that to a bunch of, a bunch of calm, sedate, rational people. He said that to the Marengo County, Alabama Republican Executive Committee. Reckon there's one or two Klansmen in there? Reckon they're going to go home and say, you know what? Our Republican National Committee member from the state of Alabama told us this evening that Barack Obama really is a Muslim and he's trying to create a Reichstag type moment. You know what? I think we better do something. And we all know what do something means in that context, right? It's frightening. On the one hand, you sit there and watch it like a national, watch it behold unfold in front of you on your computer screen, as if it was some sort of National Geographic program on people from another planet. Then you sort of sit back and you go, wait a minute, these are people who live in my country. This isn't even about weirdos in another country. This is about people who live where I live. And that's the moment where you find yourself shaking. You know, there are schools out there that public schools, they're massively successful. My head writer, David in Tennessee, just happened to be watching a football game, or the playoffs rather, the NFL playoffs, It was the game between the Saints and the Lions, and gets a little curious about the Lions quarterback Matt Stafford, so does a little research and finds out that Matt Stafford had been the catcher in high school for the guy who presently is a Cy Young winner in Major League Baseball. That's pretty curious. So David goes out there and goes wikiing around, and he finds out about this high school in Texas called Highland Park. And this place is a wonderland of education. Huge numbers on AP tests and the college preparedness. They're hosting the Texas State Junior Classical League Latin Convention. The school is, of course, 99% anybody? White. Because, as displayed in the story out of Gwinnett County, Georgia, and Beaver Ridge Elementary School in Norcross, there remains a great deal of undercurrent bigotry and prejudice, and yes, outright hatred, that they're going to our schools. And that's when public education started going to hell in the South. It's the same attitude that manifests itself in, well, Social Security. Demographically speaking, white folks are not going to be the majority of people collecting Social Security in another 20 or 30 years, so we might as well start killing it now rather than give it to those people. I mean, they don't even work. They're not deserving of it. Imagine that, just picking 58 slave picking 56 oranges off. Did you call that work? I'd beat Frederick three times a day if he was that shiftless. And that is the modern and also the antediluvian Republican Party. They would rather burn everything to the ground than see anybody else except their preferred group get it. Meanwhile, both Dr. Newt and Leroy Gingrich, get your big old head over here. Dr. Newt and Bro Fromix, Rick Santorum, each took tough questions in New Hampshire over the weekend over their apparent fascination and their weird obsession and insistence upon driving a false trope that, you know, it's those dark people who collect all the welfare. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That none of this stuff happens in a vacuum. None of this stuff just pops up like mushrooms after a spring rain, toadstools. It's there just as the toadstool springs from the loamy earth. This stuff pops up again and again and again because in places like Georgistan and Alabamistan, it remains fertile ground for its cultivation. Sometimes you really do have to plow the earth and sow it with salt and get your Carthage on. I guess that Bible verse should read, "The South ye have always with ye." And make no mistake that it is damned, well, I'm conflicted, because there are so many things about the South that I adore, love, reverence. And every now and then, you'll get a couple of stories like this. and you think, that little rump of the country, that little chunk of the population that we didn't inoculate the rest of the nation against, is yet going to spread its sickness all over this country. And that's why you get Paul Reynolds comments and math problems to third graders talking about administering beatings. I kind of wish I had a little more background in psychology, because I'd love to be able to talk to you about what it means for, say, how old are you in third grade? 8, 9? What it means for a 8 or 9 year old kid, and particularly an 8 or 9 year old black kid, to be doing word problems for Mrs. Grimblemouth that talks about beating slaves and picking cotton, and how many slaves it takes to clear a tree. I wish I had the expertise for that, truly. And I wish that these were going to be great, big, giant, huge stories. I'll hazard a guess that the Paul Reynolds story out of Alabamistan will hardly be covered at all, and any coverage that the story in Georgia gets will be as a kicker. You know, one of those funny ha-ha stories at the end of the newscast. Well, that's the news tonight, Jane. Well, thank you, Fred. And before we go, oh my goodness, look what they're doing in Georgia. If Frederick gets 2 beatings a day for a week, how many beatings has he received in a week? Wow, that's some curriculum question for Georgia, isn't it, Bill? Sure is. Have a good night and a better tomorrow. Instead, these should be the centerpieces of a desperately needed national dialogue about why this filth still pervades our system. You know, third graders can be pretty brutal people, so don't think for a minute that there weren't a couple of little cracker boys over there snickering up their sleeves about the slavery stories. Corey, in the free state of Louisville, says it's kind of funny how that trade learning in public schools is working out. The arts are pushed out because they influence creativity. Creativity leads to ideas. Ideas are bad. Trade learning leads to roboticism, unquestioning point A to point B, and simple thinking. Simple thinking is good. Trade learning is good as it provides ready-to-work labor for the labor force. And of course, they're not going to. And you know what, son? You need to join the union. That ain't there, especially not in Georgistan or Alabamistan or any other right-to-workistan. But Corey understands. He says, one problem. Where's the labor going to work? Nice racket these people have there. Deprive kids an outlet to express themselves in public schools, replace them with classes that they use manual labor more than mental ones, and then get rid of the labor market. It is a blueprint for a nice, docile, and easily fooled, massive electorate that these pigs will readily take advantage of every 2 years to make sure that the idiots will always vote for the guy who wants to keep the government out of their Social Security and who wants to cut taxes rather than the guy who wants to make sure their great-grandkids can use Social Security and to cut taxes for them but raise them on the uber-rich and corporations who don't pay their fair share of taxes. It's insidious and it's genius at the same time, says Corey. Amen. And that is by no way to denigrate the idea of having a trade skill. Jesus. If I had a little bit more, maybe the rusty red truck wouldn't be going away. If I knew a little bit more, I'd be a little more effective about figuring out what the hell happened to the water line that runs to my refrigerator. And it wouldn't have taken me a month of Sundays to get the water heater fixed. I refuse to say hot water heater. I do. It wouldn't have taken me a month of Sunday to fix the water heater. But I don't. So no. But the sad thing is that this is an economy where that doesn't work anymore. I think, you know, I reference the fact that the guy who repairs TVs for a living and has a cluttered little shop with pieces lying all over the place but can get your TV working again in a couple or 3 days, that guy isn't in town anymore. The guy who can half-sole your really good dress shoes isn't in town anymore. And both of those people put 3 or 4 kids through college doing that. They're not here anymore. They're gone. And in a nation where they are gone, we should see that as worrisome. Because it means that the middle class is gone. And if it ain't gone, it's damn sure going. A couple of other Moran Monday nominees out there. It wouldn't be Moran Monday if we didn't take a little trip to Texas. Mesquite, Texas, in particular. And the CVS Pharmacy in Mesquite, Texas. There's another example. Used to be little towns had a pharmacy. You know, they were small and boxy, and the shelves were crammed, and there was a pharmacist at the back, and in the front was somebody who ran the cash register and such. And they generally had what you needed in the way of medical stuff, and maybe the store probably smelled a little bit of candy and a little bit of camphor. But now small communities have a Rite Aid or a Walgreens. Absent the lunch counter, of course. Had to get rid of those when the dark folks started wanting to order their very own chicken salad sandwiches at the lunch counters. You can't have that. Or they've got a CVS, a Walgreens, a Rite Aid, you know. And the man or the woman who put 3 or 4 kids through college as a pharmacist, they're gone too. There's a whole list of people who are gone in this country. Economically disappeared. Didn't need any NDAA to do that. Needed a little more NAFTA to do that. And a little more corporate personhood to do that. But in particular, The Mesquite, Texas CVS has a real Lulu of a pharmacist. This is the story of Jason Melbourn. Jason Melbourn, who has a wife and children. And in this case, Mrs. Melbourn and the children were at home. And I suppose that Mr. and Mrs. Melbourn still like to enjoy what we genteel folks refer to as marital relations, but are not enchanted with the idea of having more little Melbournes. They apparently think they've got enough. Now, granted, in the world of the weird, sick freaks like Rick Santorum, there's no such thing as having enough. God wants that woman to get pregnant every time she... But this is only tangentially about the frothy one. Not too long back, Jason Melbourne went to four separate pharmacies looking for Plan B, you know, the morning after pill, for his wife. None of them had it there in Texas Stan, the Christian Republic of Texas. So finally, one of them said, "Now listen, Jason, I tell you what, I ain't for sure, but I think if you go over to Mesquite, the CVS in Mesquite has that Plan B you're looking for." And sure enough, they did. They had one box left. Thankfully, the Mesquite CVS is a 24-hour CVS, with a pharmacist on duty at all times. Well, you'd say, thankfully, unless you were, you know, Jason Melbourne. Because he didn't realize it, but submitted for your approval, Jason Melbourne has entered the Fundy Zone. Never mind the kitschy music. So, you remember we had a little discussion not too long back about girls under 17 having access to Plan B and how the Obama administration said, "No, we don't think they need to do that." And whatever reasons that was for, personally, I mean, pure stinking politics, but that doesn't enter the discussion. Jason Melbourne is over 17 years old. So, Jason Melbourne takes his box of Plan B up to buy it, and Minnie Matthew, who is the overnight pharmacist at the CVS in Mesquite, Texas, said, "I ain't going to sell it to you until I talk to and I see the ID of your wife." Really. So Jason Melbourne, being a reader of words and understander of English for some time, asks, "Why?" And Minnie Matthew points at the fine print on the medication's box and says, "See there, it says it can only be sold to someone age 17 or older. And he says, "Well, I'm older than 17. I've bought this plenty of times in my life, and it's never been a problem. You tell me every other place I've bought it from's been wrong?" Minnie Matthew, overnight pharmacist, said, "Doesn't matter. Because the medicine's obviously not for you." What was her reason? She told Jason Melbourne that she was afraid he was a rapist and that he was going back to force his victim to take it. I'll give you a moment or two to put your eyeballs back in their socket now because...
What?
Yes. She insinuated, directly intimated, that Jason Melbourne is a rapist who, having had his lascivious way with his victim, is now going to make sure that she takes Plan B so she won't get pregnant and be able to... Huh? Yes, Minnie Matthew, who I'm sure is in church every time the doors open, wants to make sure that rapist baby gets born, because it ain't the baby's fault that it's a child of rape. See, this kind of goes back a little bit to Mr. Paul Reynolds over in Marengo County, Alabama, talking about the President of the United States being a Muslim looking for a Reichstag moment. That stuff doesn't stay in the room. It gets out and about. And the next thing you know, some loopy goober is cleaning out the deer rifle and making sure it's all zeroed in real good on that Bushnell 3x9 scope. And he's going to go to Washington and get rid of that Muslim who wants a Reichstag moment. Because this is the kind of silly crap that filters down from the likes of Rick Perry talking about every life is sacred. And all of that, all those shenanigans that took place in Iowa with that idiot woman who's, I was a child of rape. I deserve to be here! Lady deserving's got nothing to do with it. And it filters down, and it eventually comes out at the CVS in Mesquite, Texas, where an idiot tells a full-grown man with a married wife and two children that he needs to go back home and make sure the little woman has more Melbournes. God Almighty! Save me from too stupid. Apparently, it's a problem in Texas because at the same time that Jason Melbourne was being refused access to Plan B, a CVS in Houston was refusing to sell it to another man. The ACLU received reports that in 2010 that Walgreens stores in Texas stan, Mississippi stan, and Oklahoma stan were all refusing to sell emergency contraception to men. This from CVS spokesman Mike DeAngelis. We have briefed our stores on official company policy, which is to follow FDA regulations for the sale of emergency contraception, which allows this product to be sold without a prescription to customers who are at least 17 years old, regardless of gender. But you see, Minnie Matthew was operating out of conscience. Remember how Rick Santorum said that not imposing your own beliefs upon everybody else defeats acts of conscience? Duh! Jason Melbourne didn't get his medicine. That means there may be another Melbourne on the way that he doesn't have the capacity to feed. God will provide. He said, I'm outraged. I've chased this thing all over town. Then I get accused of using this for rape, even after they've talked to my wife on the phone. Did I mention that they talked to his wife on the phone? He said, it makes me feel like a piece of crap. Marriage is not easy. But if you're in one and you're staying in one, and you've got two young'uns, and you're getting along pretty good, and she says, honey, I'll stay here with the kids, but I want to make sure that we don't wind up pregnant again. And gosh, you're a good daddy, and I know it's the middle of the night, and that sure was fun. Would you go out and get me some Plan B, baby? And any man in his right mind, any loving husband, is going to say, why, sure thing, honey. I'll be back in a little bit. And then five pharmacies and God knows how long later and a call to the wife and showing the conscience-driven pharmacist on the Google that it's okay, and he comes home empty-handed. Well, hell, I'd be outraged too. And got slandered in the process. I'm afraid you're a rapist. Like I said, I knew this was going to be a dandy Moran Monday. Any Moran Monday that comes together, that starts in Georgistan, moves west to Alabama-stan, and finds itself at a CVS in Mesquite, Texas-stan, can't help but be off to a good running start. It will be better, however, with what you bring to the table. You know the phone number here, right? Area code 304-658-3333. And if you need us to pay the freight on the toll-free, it's 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head-on. If you prefer to work via email, you can do that, too. The number here is The email address here is bobkincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. We've got a Jim Dandy little conversation going on in the chat room. Front door's working again. Thank you very, very much, John Fox. So there's a myriad of ways to get involved with the program, and I hope you will avail yourself of one of them. We'll be back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. It's Moran Monday.
hardships and troubles, don't you know I've had some? Getting older every day, I'm a fair weather bum. Let me tell you, good people here, it's just about time. Catch a slow train through Georgia and eat where it might.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Danny Herrera. Fox & Friends co-host Brian Kilmeade introduced a segment asking if the recent Republican debates were focusing too much on social issues and wondered if President Obama was getting a pass on some of his economic policies. Victoria Jones, White House correspondent for Talk News Radio Service, had her answer, but we have a feeling Brian didn't enjoy her response.
Brian, you know, as long as there's a Fox, there will always be a story on the president's failed policies, so we're safe here.
Are we talking about appointees that were bypassing the Senate?
We've also had the payroll tax cut, and the president was actually accused of being too much involved in that. And then we had crazy stories about the president. We had, was he taking too much of a Hawaii vacation? And then we had the disgusting story about Michelle Obama's bottom.
For this story and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Here we go, 8 minutes, 8.5 minutes past the hour. Marty asking with regard to the CVS story.
Whatever happened to the customer is always right. Well, you know, he is, Marty, and, you know, unless... you're Mini Matthew, and you're in the church every time the doors open, and your conscience doesn't want any little fetuses aborted just because they was made by a rapist, and you think you may be looking the rapist in the eye.
Sheesh. Forget about it, Jake. It's Confederacy stand. Right? Yeah. So, and by the way, Bill in Cleveland genuinely enjoyed the Norman Blake there. Slow Train Through Georgia was that track from a magnificent album called Whiskey Before Breakfast. Norman Blake. You'll notice the train goes through Georgia. It doesn't stop there. Just say it to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, man. You know, I'm just sort of stuck on that story in Georgia. It's just like, you know, the hits keep coming. But, you know, that Norcross City, you know, only have a population of less than 10,000, but it has above average demographics. I mean, you know, 35% of the population has, you know, a bachelor degree. The medium income is like 55,000. You know, it's 19% population African American, like 39% Latino, and the rest are white. I mean, it's not anything drastic as far as demographics. So it's just kind of like...
No, it's kind of Orange County, California, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you know what I mean? It's not... Anyway, because it just seems so just completely absurd, you know, what these teachers thought they were doing. And, you know, it's hard for me to... I mean, part of me thinks, man, people could be that stupid. But then it's where it's located, and you start thinking, ah, nah, you know, that's messed up. You see, you want to give people a benefit of the doubt because it seems so dumb. You know what I mean? Like, I read the whole story, and I thought, oh, my God, I can imagine people being that stupid. But then you're like, well, no, there's no way that they couldn't figure out that maybe, oh, no, that's probably not a best way of, you know, teaching kids about division. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, they're even the oldest teacher in any given public classroom right now started teaching in, what, 1970? So we're way past Brown. And
that's what I'm saying. It's just absurd. And the Frederick, you know, it's like they're trying to understand Frederick Douglass. I mean, yeah, there's so much more to focus on than when the dude was in slavery straight off the top. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't even have to focus on that, actually. So all of it is just way weird, and I'm sure the school has, you know, if the population is 20% African American, then, you know, the little ones are, you know, it's a mixed school, no doubt. But why isn't there any reprimand going on? That's the thing that's killing me. It's like, what, are they going to do some sensitivity training? God damn.
You know, whatever teacher came up with that, I'm thinking it's a little late to be putting him or her through some anti-racism training.
Oh, yeah, and
because trying to explain to a person who comes up with those questions the meaning of white privilege, gonna be lost.
Well, and it's just, I was really quite disturbed by the parent and saying, oh, my God, you know, I really am not interested. You can just hear the exasperation and just reading it, that the parent is like, oh, my God, I really am not interested in trying to explain this shit to my 8-year-old. You're like, damn, for real, though. You know, he's just there trying to help his kid learn some, you know, pre-algebra type of whatever.
Yeah, let's draw the
orange on that.
Yeah, get the orange crayon on out. Draw the 56 oranges, but then you got to draw the 8 slaves.
Well, and also, yeah, like the person said, the parent—I don't know if it's a man or woman—but the parent said, you really, you know, you don't want to have to be in a position to be explaining that to an 8-year-old. You know, Anyway, I don't know. I mean, the story didn't make me upset per se more than just like head shaking. You're like, wow, really, really way up north. But it's not up north, it's down south. So anyway.
The usual suspects, as we like to say.
Oh, God. And the other thing I was tripping on was, I mean, what is wrong with Obama? I mean, so he replaces one bank fuck with another one?
Yeah,
you know, that Jack Lew is he's from Citigroup, and this Daly was from J.P. Morgan. And I like how when they write about it in the paper, oh, he's from the Office of Budget, they never say, oh, by the way, it's yet another banker. You see what I'm saying? The media is so in cahoots. It's a joke.
Well, I had this really sad little moment. When I don't mean I was sad over who was leaving and who was coming in, but in watching all of the, because we've talked before about how I get all these right-wing pitches, right, for talking points, and I can sort of see the stuff developing as it happens. Well, last week it was all about how the recess of the Barack Obama has completely spit on the Constitution with these recess appointments. They're unconstitutional, and it's here's the key word. It is Chicago politics at its very dirtiest. And so when I saw that Daly was stepping down, I was like, oh, okay, we're going to throw the Chicago politician under the bus.
Well, he's not stepping down. He's just going to be the head of his part of his reelection Right?
Right, yeah. I mean, it's lateral, and it can be understood in that light. But by the same token, I just thought, wow, that sort of takes away the... Because, you know, Daly and his brother and his their daddy and... Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, no, but also, though, you should remember when Daly was in this position before, involved in someone's election, he was the one telling Al Gore, don't fight, don't do it. So keep that in mind.
Oh, no.
Yeah, when you think about the position that this fool is in, remember that. While you have...
So what? Other... Next up, they're going to hire that guy who, that other guy who lost the election for Gore?
No, he's dead, so...
Oh, did he die?
Yeah, they won't be hiring old Christopher, no. But I was laughing when I saw that. I said, wow, you know, don't these people ever learn any lessons at all? I mean, mind you, the clown show on the other side is just way out of hand. Listen,
oh, Newt Gingrich wanted to say pious bullshit. He was turning blue trying not to let it out, and he came up with baloney.
No, but who? What? Newt Gingrich?
Oh yeah, when he told Romney to stop with the pious baloney in the debate this weekend, he wanted to say pious bullshit so bad it was killing him.
Well, I was just laughing at, you know, the idiot that is Romney talking about, oh, how, you know, he wants to fire people. I'm like, you're an idiot. And he was trying to back off of that. Oh, my God. So, listen.
And John Huntsman speaking Chinese to Republicans.
Well, no. That was also really special. And, you know, He's a complete weirdo. I'm sorry.
He wears the underwear, too.
Yeah, he's strange. Dude is off. They're all off. But Romney is the one that is going to probably be the nominee. And so they already got some fantastic ads working against him. The sort of, what are they calling him, a predatory capitalist. And this is people in his own party.
Well, that's Newt.
It's great, because it's like, well, thank you, because, you know,
so glad you noticed.
Obama and them can just run that shit. They don't even have to pay for it. There it is. Just run it. And he is so disgusting with his corporations of people and how, oh, I don't think if you're not rich, you shouldn't run comments. I mean, the guy is disgusting, and I really don't think he's going to appeal to many people at all. It's no wonder. The more I see him, the more I think it's no wonder the far right is trying to get anybody but him. He's a disaster.
Yeah, he's icky even before you get to the weird part, I think, is what we're getting at.
He's just ill. I'm just sort of, the more of him that's coming forth, I'm like, oh my God, this guy is, yuck on Mitt Romney. Wow. Or Willard. Willard. Because his elitism and his sort of, you know, the money is just dripping off this dude. And if he thinks he can run in the state that he's in, he need a makeover if he's going to be rolling. Because I'm sorry, even if you don't agree with Occupy, I don't think people are really up for having a real live plutocrat in the White House. You know,
yeah, and to bring in, this was, I thought, the perfect follow-up, to bring in Chris Christie to criticize some Occupy people chanting in the back of the room.
Yeah, well, the Occupy people probably don't want to stay out of the way because they might get eaten by him. No, he needs to back the hell up, too. That ain't flattering. Him and Romney together? God, it's a horror show. It is an absolute horror show. You know, I'm just like, oh, my God, why don't they bring in Scott Walker and just have the Three Stooges?
Well, and bring in Rick Scott as well and go for
yeah,
it.
They can, all of them. It could be the zombie hour on Fox because they are really a frightening bunch of people. You throw Christie out there? No. Now, that's scary. Romney and Christie, and they're buds, right?
Oh, yeah, they're pals.
Yeah, no. That's funny because didn't they call him job killer, kill?
Yeah, well, the line that was laid out today that Romney is not a job creator, he's a job cremator.
Yeah!
I mean, that one in particular had some real icky factor to it because
that one is great. Yeah, so anyway, I'm just saying, see, I don't know. I'm just thinking he's, I don't know if he may be, he's worse than McCain. Because McCain, no matter how you feel about the empire, you know, there is some redeeming quality about what the man endured, even if he's a sort of character.
Yeah, I can go that, but can we just say, and this is along the lines of our conversation about Dick Clark last week, Sandra.
Well,
it's time for John McCain to go sit in the rocking chair.
Oh, no.
Have you followed some of these gaffes lately?
Yeah, no, he's finished. But what I mean is that at least when he was, you know, in his prime as far as running for office, there was something that was reasonably noble about him. But this private equity fund parasite, there's nothing there. He's despicable. I can't think of anything worse than Mitt Romney. But it also reflects a lot of what this country is about, too. I mean, people need to be careful because, you know, he epitomizes a real bad part of what's going on in America, Mitt Romney. So, I don't know.
He's St. Paul-like in that regard. He wants to be all things to all people. So he'll look at the people in New Hampshire and say, you know, remember, I was a moderate governor of Massachusetts. And then he'll go to Iowa and start spewing about women's insides.
Yeah, no.
But the McCain, just because it was so damn funny, the McCain thing, did you catch a couple of these gaffes lately?
No, I haven't.
He was talking to a crowd on behalf of Romney, and he said, Mitt Romney will be a leader. He won't lead from behind like Ronald Reagan did. Of course, he meant to say Barack Obama. And there are a couple of other ones that are just really, really Aricept isn't working kind of moments that reminded me of the time I was in Pennsylvania and Arlen Specter introduced himself to me three times in the space of 15 minutes, and each time it was new and different. He's in trouble, but because we're shallow, this was the one that really put it over the top for me. You know, we talked a little bit last week about pounding that my Mountaineers put on Clemson, right?
Right.
Well, the next day, John McCain came out in South Carolina and commended Clemson for its display of athletic superiority. Really?
Wow, okay, I guess the medication really needs to be adjusted.
That's where you get the insulated blanket in the rocking chair.
So it just makes me think that you almost get conspiracy-minded with the way the Republicans are running because, you know, I don't know.
Well, see, I personally think that John Huntsman speaking Chinese was an attempt to bait Mitt into speaking French. Because, you know, Willard is fluent in French, and that would, well, the teabaggers would be picketing outside every Romney campaign office in the country. He's French! Never mind the Mormon angle, he speaks French!
Well, no, but I mean, the man's going to have to spend the whole campaign trying to pretend that he's not worth a half a billion dollars, see? And that, I just think that in itself right now is just, you know, it's too much. We'll see, because once again, the statistics that the majority of the people who vote Republicans are people with high school and a little bit of college white folks. And it's just like, what do the Republicans do for that class is beyond me, except that class is not black, I guess. I really don't know.
And nor do I. I mean, but then again, I as hard as I try, I can't sort of get fully synced up with the Republican mind, Sandra, because, you know, how do you look at everything around you and say, well, you know, it's obviously Barack Obama's fault?
Well, no, but then you remember people like that Rick Santorum and his whole sort of, you know, bringing up, I mean, black, I mean, that's their default setting, so we just keep that in mind. No matter how ridiculous it sounds, because he is the most ridiculous out there. That's right up there with that macaca moment, Santorum, with him trying to explain it away. It's just stunning looking at it. I'm like, oh, wow.
Well, he got called on it in New Hampshire, and he said, I didn't say it when whoever it was asked, why did you say you don't want to make black people's lives better? I didn't say that. Moving on now.
So
that was his answer.
Lie. It's right on film now, man.
Right. Yeah.
So that clown show, it's going to move to South Carolina next, right?
Well, after tomorrow, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, anyway, I can't even.
And then and South Carolina will be fun. But Florida will be fun, too, because Florida's January as well.
Yeah, but we get to probably... Are they going to try to hide that Rick Scott? Because he's about as popular as Foot Fungus.
perhaps even other things as well.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be photographed in the same county with that man if I was any of these clowns.
In his own party. His own party hates him. I hate it. But then that's what I say when you elect a sort of criminal. I mean, he's a crim, so shouldn't be surprised. I mean, anyway, listen, I didn't want to stay on for too long, but I must. You know. We were having problems on the Twitter last night because I was just, I couldn't believe it. I listened to the game. I was like, what's going on? And then when I was looking at the Twitter, just 316 trending, I was like, no.
Oh, no. Yeah, they even brought that up this morning on that MSNBC morning program about.
No, see, it's so gruesome.
And they showed pictures of Tebow from his Florida days with his eye black with John 316 written in them.
Yeah.
So, you know, yesterday he had 316 yards passing on 10 attempts. Well, that's just like his favorite Bible verse, John 3:16. I don't know. Maybe on December 22nd, 2012, he needs to make sure that he's in at Chichen Itza to make sure that the ancient gods of the Maya can't overcome. I don't know. This is just lunacy.
No, it was just, I'm saying, I was like, oh, my God, I'm in an asylum, because it's just on the radio and it's just everywhere. And that's why I was just horrified when they won. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that. I said, no, not a...
And see, again, those aforementioned interview pitches, the right wing is already sending out interview pitches to talk to some psychologist about, you know, faith in your public life. For the past few years, Denver Broncos quarterback Tim Tebow has been an intriguing source of both controversy and inspiration for Americans. With the Broncos' 29-23 win over the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday, he is again in the spotlight for both his athletic skills and his habit of Tebowing, or kneeling down in prayer during games. Many today are even assessing the parallel between his 316 passing yards and his favorite Bible verse, John 3:16. They're pitching it, Sandra. It isn't just sort of trending into the dialogue. The right wing is out there shoving this at people.
Well, no, and it's just... Anyway, and then when he was, you know, of course, I'm listening, and his little, he's so gee willikers, and his interview style, well, the most exciting thing is I'm spending time with, you know, some poor child that's had 70 operations. And, you know, what do you say to that?
Oh, no, you don't goon on that. I mean, I wouldn't goon on that.
No, I'm just like, what? You know, anyway, I don't know. I just was, the whole thing is just, it's also a part of that horror show. You know, the Tim Tebow hour. It's just, it's too weird. It's bizarre.
It's, and disgusting. Let's not forget disgusting.
You know?
Because every time I see him bow in prayer on the field or point his finger up at Jeebus or whatever, I just, it's hard on my own spirit, Sandra, because I immediately, just because of the kind of person I am, I guess, I immediately think about some starving kid in Haiti that Jesus can't be bothered to help because he's making sure that Tim Tebow gets 316 yards passing.
Well, yeah, no, it's just too much, you know, and I just, you know, I just really need for it to stop in the form of a defeat so they're out of the playoffs. You see what I'm saying? I'm just into having pragmatism now.
The other pragmatic side of this is that John Elway has been cheated out of any attempt to get a real quarterback.
Oh, my God. I was listening to, you know, the way they're trying to box dude in and, you know, and I'm thinking, damn, did he sign up for this shit? Anyway, because, you know, yeah.
Well, when the season started, Elway was thinking, we don't have a lot in the cupboard here, and if I play my cards right, I can get Andrew Luck.
Well, some madness like that, right.
Because I'm sure Elway would love to have another Stanford quarterback, because you don't get through. It's Stanford, and even the athletic programs at Stanford, you kind of have to have some brains.
A little bit.
And
a little bit, yeah.
And I mean, you know, we're not talking about the dude that came from LSU to the Raiders. You know, Jamarcus. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring that up.
You were right. I'm thinking about that cough syrup. Every time I hear about the dude, I think, damn, idiot. Anyway, yeah. Sorry.
And so that could, and, you know, he could have let Tim Tebow go to some other sucker team or made him the...
Jacksonville.
Yeah, why not?
Down there. Shit, they love it.
But no, I'm supposed to have... They want me to have this clown on the program and ask him questions like this. Why Tim Tebow has gained such deep admiration and such criticism. Why the Tebow family story resonates with pro-life Americans and people of faith. Oh, God. So, just remember, I mean, this has gone out all over the country, and just because we're having a little sport with it here, those questions, those precise questions are going to be asked of Dr. Timmy Kimmel. I'm not kidding.
Oh, God. No, I'm not. No, I find the whole thing just... It's just, like you said, it's borderline depressing and, you know, I mean, it's sort of, you know, the whole game was tough because, yeah, I'm not really interested in rooting for no damn rapist, but I just, the Tim Tebow thing I'm sick of, and, you know, I'll be right there. I'm not a New England fan, you know I'm not, but I'm sorry, they don't have weird, you know, people aren't complete weirdos and freaks on that team. So
and let's remember that the Steelers were half of a team.
Well,
know.
Yeah, I guess, but I mean, yeah, no, I suppose so, but I really expected them to eke out a win, though. That's all. I'll admit, I was surprised. I'm like,
well, I mean, they got it tied up in the fourth quarter, and that's the way it should have worked out. That break, I mean, that was just a straight up break in coverage. That, you know, first play of overtime.
No. Break is right. Break down, more like it. But yeah.
Yeah, just coverage wasn't there. And I don't know. Did Jesus run that crossing route? What?
Well, I bet, but is Jesus God or whatever in the sky gonna have a real joke on us by having Tim Tebow and Madonna at the Super Bowl? My head's gonna explode, Bob. It can't happen.
Oh, you know, no. Just
the real virgin and the material girl, all in one place? No. That's
and I want them to just be left alone for 15 minutes in the green room.
Oh, but anyway, so yeah.
He'll walk out with a goofy smile on his face, and it'll all be over. It'll be like Samson getting a haircut.
Well, it's just sort of, but we can't have we just cannot have it. I mean, because. You know,
I'd be more worried if it was Justin Bieber and Tim Tebow at the Super Bowl.
Well, that makes me feel, thank you for that. That's really...
That's okay, I'll get email.
No, but, you know, because I'll admit it, I'm looking forward to whatever the hell Madonna is supposed to be doing at halftime at the Super Bowl.
Why not? I mean...
That should be amusing. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't try to drag poor old David Bowie out of retirement.
Who's looking like Bing Crosby now?
Stop! Shit, the duet. They probably tried to project Bing Crosby or something. Biggest thing again.
Well, but you know what? I got to share this with you before we go, though, because David in Tennessee is on the same wavelength, and David's got it laid out now. He's got the plan. We're going to answer John 3. We're going to answer the 316 yards.
Yeah,
because he's already praying to various and sundry, you know, household items, candles, things in the sky, whatever, for the final score to be Patriots 66, Denver 6.
Oh God, if we could get some sort of 666 in there some way, yes.
Please. Well, but then again, and wouldn't that just confirm everything? Wouldn't that? I mean, because everybody knows that Bill Belichick is the Antichrist.
Exactly. No, no, no. Well, yeah, there is that narrative that's going to be happening. Yeah. Listen. Oh God, is that going to be when is that game? Is it all the games on Saturday and Sunday, or is it just Sunday? Oh, okay.
No, it's Sunday. It's Sunday. Because the teams that. Doesn't it work out that the teams that played on Saturday play on Saturday and the teams that played on Sunday play on Sunday?
Okay, because out here, you know, we got the whole 49ers stuff. And, you know, I know it's bad, but I'm pulling for the Saints. I cannot stand the 49ers. Ugh.
Well, I like Sean Payton better than Harbaugh.
The whole 49ers stuff is you can imagine out here. Unlike the Kings, damn, they started out one game. Next thing you know, they have fired the coach. It's crazy.
Well, it is. And then, the nice thing is we have this kind of stuff, Sandra, to keep our heads from exploding.
Well, I must add another thing with the sports. Since we're on it, the other thing that's making me roll, of course, is the, like, sorry, we don't care if you are Peyton Manning. We ain't paying you no $28 million. You need to step on. How much you want to bet? They ain't gonna pay him $28 million.
No.
They then fired his allies. They said bye bye to them two people, and the guy said, "I'm gonna take that Luck kid." So Peyton Manning with his fused neck is gonna get $28 million. No.
Mm-mm. No.
So
no.
He gonna be at Kansas City or wherever they go after they leave their team.
Well, I mean, I personally think if it was, you know, if I'm Daddy Archie, I'm sitting the boy down and saying, son, you know, you've had a nice run, you've got a Super Bowl ring, you're going to be Hall of Fame. It ain't worth winding up the being Stephen Hawking to play another year in the league. Because, I mean, he runs that risk.
Yeah, and I heard that all these people say you don't even want to step out there, let alone contemplate playing. Another year or two. Yeah, anyway, I just think
remember Marty reminding me, remember that the offensive coordinator for New England is now the guy who insisted on drafting Tebow in the first place, Josh McDaniels.
He's back in New England again?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that he had slithered back. Oh.
Oh, it's anyway. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Update. It is a Saturday game.
Mm.
Marty wants everybody to know that Harbaugh is winning with Mike Singletary's team. Yeah, because they had to get rid of Singletary and bring in Harbaugh, and this is all Harbaugh's success. But
I know we don't. That's all we ever hear out here in California, though. In Northern California, it's just like nonstop. Stop. It's like,
And you gotta, when you get a minute, you gotta go over and read the report at thinkprogress.org on the money behind the bowl championship series. You know how you mentioned from time to time that, yeah, this is America, and in America, kids don't get paid to play football or basketball on the college level. That's kind of bothersome.
Yeah.
Well, I will hear you screaming from here, Sandra. When you read that thing at Think Progress about them, the people who run the bowls, well, all the bowl games are 501c3 nonprofits, okay? And all of the major bowl CEOs are CEOs of nonprofits, and they all make more than $500,000 a year.
Okay, yeah, so it's just it's just servitude then.
Yeah, among other things. The last time New Orleans hosted both the Sugar Bowl and the BCS title game, the two games together generated $34.1 million in revenue. Of that, Sandra, $11.6 million was tax-free profit. So wouldn't that just gag a rat?
Wow, yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, everyone who gives any of that kind of stuff any thought knows that the players, i.e. the workers, are being screwed completely.
Yeah.
I don't care if they're in college. Don't give me this BS about an education, because even if you get the degree, it don't mean that much anymore. So spare me that bullshit.
Yeah, well, exactly. And by the way, fan mail coming in. Tim from L.A. noting, when Sandra comes on and talks about Tim Tebow and sports in general, it's actually interesting. This coming, he said, my mind don't shut down nor my eyes glaze. And this from somebody who says, I don't watch sport unless my niece or nephew are playing soccer.
No, it's just that it's, like I said, it's soap opera for men, so it's quite fun to talk about.
Yeah.
But I have to ask you, because I'm still, I can't process that story that you just talked about. Is that for real, that some husband who is just trying to spare himself an unwanted pregnancy couldn't find the fucking pill for...
Well, yeah, that's the front end of the story. He went to four pharmacies that didn't have it, and he finally goes 15 miles away to Mesquite, Texas, and finds one box on the shelf and a fundy who won't sell it to him.
This is a grown-ass man.
Yes, with two children and the wife at home, and he puts the pharmacist on the phone with the wife who asks him, please, or asks her, please sell this to my husband.
Well, no, but did he end up getting it, though? Because, I mean, there's only a small window to go that route.
No, she wouldn't sell it to him.
Oh, my God. No, I mean, I can't even process that because, I wasn't thinking that the shelves were overflowing with this product, but I figured that it was available in most drug stores. And you're telling me that not only is it not in stock, but grown men are subjected to being accused of using it to hide a rape or something?
Bingo! And you know, that kind of thinking doesn't happen independently in the average fundy mind, Sandra. That's the kind of thing that gets talked about at church. And so if it's not on the shelf in Left Elbow, Texas, and it's not on the shelf in Busted Knuckle, Texas, and it's not on the shelf in Aiken Toe, Texas, then it's not on the shelves there because the folks at the Amalgamated Fundamentalist Tabernacle and Herpetological Seminary have, you know, banded together and made sure that, you know, that's abortion medicine. And they, by God, won't go to the CVS if they're selling abortions.
No, but I mean, and a story that could be quite, you know, makes me happy to hear about some man who's concerned enough about his wife to take care of her in that way. I was like, this is great. And, of course, you have to destroy it by this madness. You know what I mean?
And again, a month ago, the same damn thing happened in Houston.
Oh, I didn't, you know, I'm thinking that if you, at least if you're grown, over 18, you can just go and buy this, at any drugstore. At least that's how it is in this state, so.
Well, but y'all are all going to hell.
I just can't even believe it. I can't even believe this man.
Well, and I'm going to make it a little bit worse, backing up to the Steelers and the Broncos real quick. David in Tennessee reminding me. Oh, by the way, and Bob, the wide receiver that caught Tebow's winning pass in overtime, born on December 25th. No, really. So it's being put out there.
Oh, God. Ah, it's sickening. It is. The whole narrative is just beyond.
Yeah.
Man.
And then coming back to the CVS Plan B story, Marty reminding me that at the same time that the man can't get the pill to give to his wife because he might be a rapist because we want to make sure that the rape victim has the baby.
Well, wait a minute. Yeah, I mean, I can even, don't even go there. Yeah, that's...
Well, by the same token, real live, not kidding, traumatized rape victims have also been denied the right to purchase this medication.
No, but in the meanwhile, though, the absurdity of it, it's like, oh, wait, is the rape victim tethered to this man? What are they talking about? Oh, she's just waiting at home for me to come back.
And she's, she's back. She's back at the roadhouse on the pool table, and the boys are watching her till I get back.
I mean, it's just, wow, you know, unbelievable. That has to be like one of the worst stories I've heard in a while.
And I mean, without being a total ass or talking down or anything, in any of the industrialized countries, and you know, I do get the international notes. Does this happen in France? Does this happen
you know, in the beating heart of Roman Catholicism, Italy. I don't know. Is Plan B available in Ireland? I mean, this is, and I guess what I'm getting at, without trying to seem xenophobic or a snob or elitist or anything like that, this is the kind of thing that goes on in places where religion is practiced it with a rosary in one hand and a dead chicken in the other.
Well, and it's just also, you have to laugh at the whole hysteria about Sharia, because Sharia papia, that's what's going on here.
Yeah, the only reason they don't want Sharia laws, they're afraid it'll compete.
Well, I know, but it's just, I mean, it's absurd. And especially when the basis of all this is like, you had sex, how dare you? We're going to punish you by, you know, forcing you to possibly bear a child. I mean, the whole thing is just...
You're married. What's wrong? Why wouldn't you want to have another baby? You're married. You're supposed to have babies.
Oh my God! I mean, it's just.
And you know, there's a variety of reasons out there. She's staying home. You know, the wife is staying home with. Mrs. Melbourne is staying home with the kids because they got little kids. There's that. Maybe having those little kids tore up her insides. Maybe the doctor has said don't have any more babies.
Well, no, but also, you know...
Or maybe they just don't want another one.
Not only that, but and then why shouldn't the husband go out and take care of it? You know, what is the problem? They're married. It's a marriage. I don't know, the whole thing just... It's just so wrong on so many levels, you know? It's like, there's this product out there to help, you know, make your life a bit easier.
Yeah, and there's the... I mean, I'll speak for a moment from the guy perspective. And I'm not trying to be a Philistine or anything about it, but by the time you're married for a while, for all of the barroom conversation and the machismo and the bravado and everything, I don't know just too many guys who having been married for more than 15 days, are all creeped out by running down to the quick sack, for a box of tampons, you know, whatever. Yeah, you know, because we're guys. We're married guys, and that means we're sort of, you know, we know the lodge high sign and how everything works. And you know, so what's the big deal?
Big deal, you know. If he had
shown up there with a box of Playtex Easy Glides, well, you know, would Minnie Matthew have looked at him and said, well, did you rape her?
No, it's just, that story is just, it's so outrageous, and I'm really disturbed that they still weren't able to buy the product. That's the thing. So now what?
Yeah.
I mean, the next level...
Well, the now what, Sandra, is that Texas Stan is a place where if you surveyed the majority of the population, they would say that filthy harlot didn't need it in the first place, that she wouldn't have a baby growing in her if God didn't put it there. And I'm not trying to sound mean. That's how weird it is down there. Don't rely on me. You know, I guess Texas Betsy's not in the chat room right now, but, you know, we've got a bunch of Texas listeners who deal with the freaks on a daily basis. You know, I can conjure Rick Goodner, maybe. And, oh, Bob, they're that weird. No, they don't want it on their shelves. They begrudge birth control. They begrudge, well, they don't begrudge the condoms because, you know, men might want one if they didn't want to have a little bastard. You know, maybe they're okay with the condoms, but certainly not anything that puts a woman in charge of her own body.
Yeah, no, I guess I'm just sort of, I mean, I guess I'm also just really gobsmacked by that whole thing. It's sort of, you know, where in the world are we living?
Well, that's why I put the letters STAN behind these places.
Yeah, I mean, the four places were, what, all of a sudden out of the product, too? Unbelievable.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's a corollary to this. I had a story in the stack for last week about this poor 14-year-old girl. Not the poor 14-year-old girl who was finally back home, by the way.
Oh, God, you know?
this poor 14-year-old girl in Afghanistan who was kidnapped and held captive in somebody's basement where she was burned with cigarettes and tortured in order to get her to accede to a forced marriage to some creepy old man. Somehow she finally escaped to India. But, you know, that's Afghanistan. And, of course, everything, well, you know, that's the way it is with Islam. No, that's the way it is with tribal cultures that are existing the same way they were in the 4th century B.C. as they are in the, you know, 21st century C.E. And, but what the hell, there's not just a hell of a lot, it's not a long drive between that 14-year-old girl and a woman who can't get Plan B in Texas. And so, you know, we do well to dampen or bank back any fires of superiority that we presently maintain.
Yeah. No, it's it definitely is a different world, I tell you. I gotta keep these girls in California. Screw that.
Shit. Yeah, don't let them get anywhere near Jesus land.
Oh my God. Hey, yeah, anyway. Okay, listen, have a good evening.
All right, you take care, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. Email coming in from Kim up in Michigan. Bob, no. You acknowledging that you have gone out and bought a box of Tampax is making Ray really nervous. You must be making the men out there in Hornland really antsy. No, I mean, no. You feel a little more civilized. I got daughters. You know, we have code. We have a code. Dad, I need a box of cigars while you're out. Okay, baby. Sure. So, you know, no, like Sandra said, I applaud the guy for being willing to go out and do it, look for the stuff, and then he runs up against this fundamentalist firewall that exists down there? Jiminy Christmas! Hey, welcome to the program. Well, okay. Moving on. Hey, welcome to the program.
You missed your chance, sucker!
What?
That person missed their chance.
Oh yeah!
They dropped the phone. They just missed it completely.
Exactly. Yeah, you snooze, you lose.
Right. They probably just were reaching to grab it real quick, and you know they dropped it. Dropped the call. You got to take your time, people. You have to breathe. Go into Zen mode, and just wait patiently for your turn.
Exactly.
So. And don't get so abrupt about it. So, yeah, I was listening to you, what you were talking about, and I just thought I'd bring this into the conversation because I watched this. Actually, what I wanted to talk to you about was, and I urge everyone to go listen to this podcast, Peter Joseph, the creator of Zeitgeist, was actually on Joe Rogan, and they sat down for 2.5 hours discussing issues of the day. And I found it interesting that this guy, Peter Joseph, he never capitalized, which is amazing to me. He never capitalized on the whole Zeitgeist phenomenon where he would pay for, and he's not paid for lectures, he's not paid for appearances. They just pay for his airfare. And he was talking about how he's doing this new movie and it's almost making him broke. So he's a really interesting guy to listen to, Bob. He comes from the background of being a classical musician, percussionist, and he talks about why he got interested in this through various people, George Carlin, Bill Hicks, the usual suspects, and it's a really interesting look into the way our society is going. And Joe Rogan pushed back on him quite a bit because he was talking about the planning for society and how we would make this society work, kind of like they were talking basically about the Venus Project a little bit and stuff like that, Jacques Fresco and all of that. And it was just an interesting whole discussion. So if people want to check that out, they should.
Yeah, and I mean I've seen Zeitgeist. Well, that would be interesting because there's some stuff you can push back against in there.
Well, see, the interesting thing about it from the thing that makes Peter Joseph so interesting is the fact that his age, when he was doing these films, and this is crazy to me, he was like 28 or 27. He's now 32. So he's 28 or 27. He had already had the background of being a classical percussionist and an orchestra and already gone through that. And then the fact that he just decided to start going into this whole presentation of getting into the documentaries and narrating and all of that, and the fact that the fact that he didn't capitalize on it like an Alex Jones, that's really interesting to me. Really, really interesting to me, because he talked about the fact that he really wasn't interested in money in that sense. And whoever wants to have him, they're welcome to. I mean, they can just call him up and say, Peter Joseph, could you please come here? And there are no little games that he plays or anything like that. It was really refreshing to hear somebody who didn't have anything to pitchers or to say, hey, my Zeitgeist t-shirts are at zeitgeistt-shirts.com. Go check them out. They're $19.95. Shipping is $10.95. And with the Joe Rogan listening podcast, I'll give you 5% off. It was none of that. It was really interesting to hear, so people should definitely check that out.
Without a doubt, well, I think you're just reflecting the fact that it's kind of nice when there's not always a hustle involved.
Yeah, there was no hustle with Peter Joseph, and he really explained. He really explained when people talked about like the pushback that he got, how he was constantly challenged. And the interesting discussion was when he talked about like every single point in his movie which is amazing, is always, he was talking about how it's always criticized and debated. And he says, I was wondering, is like, I was talking to some professionals and they were talking about how they have people on standby to keep the creative ideas from being pushed into our consciousness. And he said, it's just funny that all of these people are on 24/7 a day. And he was talking about how a lot of these agencies were hired to keep a lot of his ideas from gaining any ground.
That's
it makes you think. It makes
well,
you
because
think
because
everything.
Zeitgeist just for those Zeitgeist deals with if I'm thinking about the same film, aren't I? The
right.
One that talks about origins of religious doctrines and things like that, and their transferal into the modern world. Is that it?
Yeah, and then he did mention the fact that he was sort of sorry for touching on 9/11, and that's when it got really kind of controversial. Like his views on that, when they were talking about that on Joe Rogan, pushed back on him quite a bit. Like he said, so where are these 15 guys, or however many it would take, and so forth, to bring down these two buildings? And I mean, the fact that Joe Rogan pushed on him, I was like, I was really impressed by that. I don't agree with him on those points at all, but I can see where he thought he made his mistake on that, because this is pretty much why a lot of people are just constantly want to go after him, whatever he says. It's almost like a case in point, because he said this one thing, everything else he says is irrelevant. You know what I mean?
Well, that's a concept known as impeachment, whereby
yeah.
if somebody lies about X, you can't trust them on Z. And sometimes it's applicable, sometimes not.
But, you know, the problem is since we live in the Internet age, more and more people are easily discredited by anonymous sources, just constantly berating. A lot of comedians are having this problem, a lot of entertainers. It causes a lot of stress for them because, you know, there's constant people, these constant streams of attacks. You know, we can talk about the whole thing about Twitter and what my feelings on that, Bob. The fact that somebody is on Twitter in the timeline talking about how Occupy Wall Street stuff is incohesive. You look at their timeline, he's got over 190,000 posts. It's ridiculous. And you look at it, you go, okay, either this person is A, crazy and obsessed, B, paid for, hired, or C, just really enjoys wasting time.
I honestly don't. I mean, some of the big tweeters out there.
Yeah.
The ones who are there day in and day out. I simply don't. I don't know how they manage to
do that much. It's mind-boggling.
And, Bob, this is the thing that I tell people constantly. I tell people constantly, you know, the people on these timelines, the people on these blogs, when you are anonymous, that's great. You can be anonymous. But the minute you start saying, I'll sue you for slander, and you're anonymous, and you could just continue to berate people back and forth, and yet you still continue to make these points where you want to go after, like what I was telling you in that email, where you go after progressive pundits from A to Z, it looks goddamn suspicious to me. So suspicious, in fact, you tie that to someone saying, well, I'm going to still be anonymous, but I can attack you. That's hilarious to me.
Well,
look what they did to Shannon Moore, Bob. Look what they did to Shannon Moore.
Shannon got slimed?
Yes, I mean, Shannon got slimed, too.
And what was her terrible sin?
I think she was talking about how she made a passing comment. She didn't mention her name, but she said something like, if your name has the mood, your race or ethnicity in it, and your sex, I don't think I really want to talk to you. And so that was kind of like a dig at angry black lady.
Yeah.
And so she kind of asked for it in that respect, but here's the thing about it. And this is the thing that people need to understand. It's obvious that someone was watching her feed, and she didn't.
Oh, and rantattling. That's the thing. I don't know if it's like this on the right wing side, but on the left or progressive. So what left? We got it's third grade. You know, maybe we'd be better off counting oranges off of trees. But no, the tattle factor is. Did you see what somebody said? Retweet. And you know, I just don't do that. I find it useful. I like Twitter. But it's also incredibly inane.
Oh, my God. I mean, you can get into some real issues in terms of just all across the board. And I think, but see, the problem here is, Bob, the problem is that so many people are afraid to point out and say something like, you know, you're talking about all of these people in this respect. You're putting them through the trials and the fire. But at the same time, you're doing some crazy bad shit yourself. And nobody is really, nobody really is going to that length of what I was talking about, of the fact that that there are people on Twitter who just constantly talk to, it's really suspicious, Bob. The fact that they talk to all these progressives on the phone, and then the minute they're like, oh, you know, this, Occupy Wall Street thing, it's really,
Well, no, they're setting up themes and tropes, David.
And, yeah, I know.
And they're deliberately trying to shape the discussion for whatever it is they decided that they want it to be. And frankly, sometimes I agree and sometimes I don't. You know, my purpose is to put stuff, you know, I put stuff out there telling people what's going on with the show, when I'm going to be here, when I'm not. You know, we're at the emergency room, we had a car wreck, you know, and just letting folks know why I'm not behind the mic. That, or I'm putting out stories of that I find interesting. Sandra and me and a few others are sitting having an online conniption over the prospect of having to watch one more week of Broncos football. You know, that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, speaking about that, Bob, you really...
I want the Patriots to... No, I am so on board with David from Tennessee. I want that final score to be 66-6 so bad I can't stand it.
Bob, a curious thing has happened to me regarding Tim Tebow, because so many people are talking about him. I now am rooting for Tim Tebow to go to the Super Bowl.
Well, I hate to say it, but I would at least like... maybe like for him to line up against the Ravens.
Right.
Because there's a defense that, well, there's at least one player there who would like to clean Tebow's pious little clock and has said so. You know, that's on the non-believers' side. And so that wouldn't break my heart. But, 66-6 Patriots, I think, would just answer everything.
that would be a great score. But
or there's, you know, or there's the other, there's the other potential storyline of the Saints versus the Saint. That could, you know, in the Super Bowl, see that, and that's the way the for-profit sports media works. Everything has to fit within the narrow confines of a concept.
But if Tebow does go to the Super Bowl, can you imagine all the great country anthem classics?
Well, they'll probably fire Madonna and hire Toby Keith.
They might do that. But no, I think Madonna's pretty much a done deal, which is pretty sad, the fact that, we look at all the talent for halftime shows and we say, really, this is the best that people can come up with?
Yeah, I know. But
And the money that they pay tickets for, I mean, come on.
Oh, I long ago gave up any idea of ever seeing a professional football game in the stadium.
I do have to say, though, if the Mayans were onto something in the in a new age of enlightenment that we are about to go through, I do find it curious that we are about to have a new Van Halen album with David Lee Roth in February.
Is that is that really going to happen?
Bob, it is set in stone. He went to...
But, I mean, at this point, isn't David Lee... The day is gone. Isn't David Lee Roth going to sound a little bit like Grandpa Simpson at this point?
Well, here's the thing about David Lee Roth. He's such an entertainer on stage, and he tells these great stories. If you go on YouTube and you type in Ode to Manny's, his uncle is Manny Rothstein, who owned Cafe Wa, who was the launching pad for Bob Dylan, Jimi Hendrix, all of those people. So he grew up in that environment. If you think about that for a second, Bob, you think about how much learning and information he got that. He was there at 7 years old.
But nobody ever told him to sock a little bit away.
I think you know what happened is the whole thing with the ego, the drugs, the fact that people kept telling David Lee Roth, you're so awesome. You're great. The way you do that, the way you do those splits in the jump video, the California Girls cover, oh my God, man, you're unstoppable. And I think he just believed his own hype to that point. It'll be interesting to see. I'm kind of blown away the fact that, you know, Interscope Records, the album's done. It's completed, it's mixed. And here's the other crazy thing. The bass player, who isn't Michael Anthony, by the way, but is Van Halen's son, is actually a goddamn badass, and he fits...
Oh, Wolfgang? Isn't his name Wolfgang?
Yeah, Wolfie. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. And, you know, that's going to be so surreal when people pay for their tickets and they vote. They have a whole bunch of stadiums lined up. They're going to do Madison Square Garden. I mean, it's gonna be an insane moment if David Lee Roth and Van Halen, if they can pull this all off. But I'm just amazed the fact that I never thought I'd see it happen.
Well, nor I, and frankly, the idea that it's really going to come out and all the tracks have been laid down is surprising. I figured there would have been a meltdown by now.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I mean, but I think what ended up happening was the fact that, you know, David Lee Roth, obviously, he probably needed the money. The Van Halen brothers, they probably wanted to solidify their whole family and their estate, and they realized that there was no other way to continue to getting their name out and continue to have a career unless they came out with the new Van Halen that a lot of people were waiting for.
Well, you know, John Fox is in the chat room right now, David, and he's saying, I think Eddie is not a well man. Hence the desire to take Wolfgang on the road.
No, John, I got to disagree with you. John, I got to disagree with you. The guy, the son, I would have just like said, are you kidding me? This kid on bass, you see some footage on YouTube and he fits right.
No. No, John's getting at the point that that Eddie may not be physically healthy.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we could say the same.
Because, I mean, he's been through a lot.
I mean, we could say the same thing about Keith Richards. We're going to have to wait and see how they look on stage and how they're able to pull off the classic songs and how well they're able.
Well, the cynics are lining up, David. Fritz in Arkansas just wrote Van Halen, the Geezer Tour. And he said, so will Van Halen use the cheesy album naming system it did back in the 80s, 1984, OU812? And when will the band headline in Branson? Oh, that hurts.
Well, I would answer to that the fact that I think if you look back into their catalog and the fact that they have such a loyal fan base, and you look into how many musicians were inspired, you know, by Alex Van Halen, Eddie Van Halen, all of that. You look into that, and there is this there is something to be said for what they did as a band. Especially if you, I would say this. I would say, you look at the quality of musicianship in just Eddie and Alex, and I don't care. A lot of people, this is going to hurt some feelings, but a lot of people who criticize this band, you couldn't hold a candle to those two as musicians. I mean, I'm sorry, you couldn't. That's just the bottom line. That's just the common thing that I see with so many people who constantly talk about Van Halen in a sense. I look at them as the quality and caliber of musicians that they are, they're on that level. I'm sorry. They're on that level where a lot of people, you know, are just constantly going to chip at them and say, well, you know, they weren't that good. Yes, they were that good. You try making those albums sound like that, you're not going to do it.
No, there's no getting around the influence and the talent level. And, God, some of the, I mean, the classics are still classics.
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. And, you know, when a lot of people, I think this is the problem, is that when you look at musicians like that and the fact that they saturated the whole media, you just think that
look, Eruption still sounds amazing.
I mean, we're going to have to wait and see. What they did at, you know, the performance they did at Cafe Wa was pretty bold. I mean, they invited 200 people. You play at a club like that and you're naked.
Oh yeah. Well, there's a big difference between 200 folks in an intimate club setting and 20,000 in an arena.
And I mean, and that's part of the problem with a band that big. This always goes back to this. With a band this big, and you automatically have to play that stadium. You automatically have to play that arena. So that is going to, you're going to be put through the pressure cooker in that sense. Like, oh, if you make one flub, you're done for on stage. It's that kind of environment. I always roll my eyes at that because it's like, people, once you're put in that area, once you're put in that ranking, you can't get out of that. You're in that special category of ranking, and you have to perform at this level. Otherwise, you know, the wolves come out and they say, oh, well, I see this band is just playing clubs. What a bunch of losers. You can't win. That's what I'm saying.
You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Exactly. Well, February when, David?
February when? That's a good question. I think it's like mid-February or maybe February 27th, somewhere around there. For the album, I think late February.
I wonder if there will be an arena tour.
Well, you know, there's the Madison Square Garden. I mean, I think they're going to probably do a world tour if it all works out in the United States.
Well,
and here's the other thing. This is the other thing people need to understand. You need to understand that a lot of the people never got to see David Lee Roth, and this is something that they want to take their kids to see. So there's this family connection. It goes beyond just rock stardom and star and legends and monsters of rock and all of that. There's this connection that they directly want to see somebody like David Lee Roth on tour with Van Halen because they dreamed of this moment, and now it's finally here.
For a minute, though, I wouldn't love to figure, you know, if they play Pittsburgh or something, figure out a way to take Ferg and the girls and Agnes and just all pile in and go see him. But Jesus, David, the tickets will be $75 a pop if they're a minute.
Oh, I agree with you. And here's the other insane thing, Bob. Guess who's opening for him? This thing blew my mind, Bob. Who do you think's opening for Van Halen, people?
Hey, that's a tough one. I'm not even going to guess.
When I say this name, everyone's going to go, what? Celebration, Good Times, Come On. Cool and the Gang is...
No, stop it. Stop it.
Cool. No, I'm serious. And here's the thing about it. I'm looking at this like, wow, the management and the agents, and the what is it? I think Van Halen have the same agents as
Cool in the game.
Cool in the game. So you're automatically looking at this like, are they deliberately trying to sabotage this? So when Van Halen comes
No, you're maximizing your demographic. You got folks that'll come out to see Cool in the Gang, you got and get some Van Halen, you got some folks who'll come out to see Van Halen and go, oh wow, Cool in the Gang.
Bob, I know you're being a little bit sarcastic in that sense, because they were already started kind of like this war on the message boards, because it's like, it really is like polar opposites. When you have something like that, you're going to have some tension. It was like when Prince opened up for the Rolling Stones. But it's worse than that, because when they come out, they're going to do, what is it, Ladies Night Celebration? They're bound to get booed. That's why I say it's almost like...
I don't think they will. I don't think they will.
I'm telling you, you got the metalheads. When you bring the metalheads into anything, that's a fine line, Bob.
I don't see it.
Bob, here's the thing. This is the thing that a lot of people...
No, because the easy call would be like Counting Crows or, you know, something like that. Or yeah.
Yeah.
Understand, David. See, if you had said Justin Bieber, I was going to reach through the microphone and strangle you. Okay? Because I couldn't cope with that.
Yeah.
Unless maybe the thought of, you know, David Lee Roth teaches Justin Bieber to get his Jack Daniels on. Two, three shows into the tour, and Justin Bieber is a liquored up wreck on stage. I could have signed up for that one.
I'm such
a mean person, you know. Justin Bieber is such a pure little fellow, and
I'll tell you one thing about Bieber that's pretty impressive is the fact that if you go on YouTube and you type in Justin Bieber on drums, you'll be shocked. He's actually a pretty good drummer.
Well, I guess, bless his heart, Keith Richards had to quit everything. Otherwise, I'd say that, you know, Justin needed to do an apprenticeship with Keith or something. But we went through Bieber fever here, and it was not pleasant, David. Yuck! It was worse than when Doodle went through the Miley Cyrus phase. I mean, I got teenagers here. There are powers at work that you do not comprehend, my friend.
I understand completely, Bob. I think that...
I mean, no, I feel, I'm not 50 yet, and I feel like a total geezer. I grew up on rock and roll, and my kids will be in the car, certainly not the truck anymore, but we'll have the radio on, and they'll say, well, I want to put it on my station. And I'll be sitting there, born to be wild. What's wrong with this? Well, it's old, Dad. And they'll put it on, and it'll be something with a bunch of auto-tune to it, and it sounds like it's being sung by R2-D2. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, just get me the prune juice and take me to the home and get me the blanket and the rocking chair. I'm screwed because this means nothing to me.
And, you know, the other thing is you're in the age of complete media saturation where you get out of the car and then you get on YouTube and there's Bieber. You turn on the TV.
I was looking for something yesterday. Oh, I know what it was. I was looking for the football game, and I accidentally found myself over at NBC where there was some sort of ice skating gymnastics extravaganza going on, and a young woman with terrible makeup in a spotlight, you know, there's a lot of glare off the ice and everything, wearing a pink Tinkerbell dress, singing something about put your heart in the air, and I had no choice. I just had to come in here into the studio and listen to some 120 decibel Who for a few minutes just to get all the saccharin out of my system. I'm just a bad person. I'm a geezer, I guess, and I don't get it. Because I found myself going, well, son, you know what? Back in the day, I listened to rock and roll singers who actually sang their music without putting it through a computer first. And all of a sudden, I hear my dad saying, you know, that Frank Sinatra, now he could sing. I can't understand a word those boys are saying you're listening to, and why won't they get a haircut? I'm like, oh, God.
I think there is something, though, to not just age. I think there is something to the fact that it would be an interesting study to see how similar all of the songs are on one station regarding a binaural frequency. You just have it completely mapped out.
Oh, it's just, well, I don't even, the local radio, you know,
yeah.
I don't even fool with that anymore. There's nothing there. And it just, and I don't recognize anybody. I feel like I've time traveled. I feel like Rip Van Winkle, and I've woke up in a time when music isn't even music anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I got more of a kick out. You know what bad lip reading is, right?
Right.
Yeah, I got more of a kick out of their Black Eyed Peas song and their Justin Bieber song than the actual music itself. I mean, when that one guy from whoever the hell it is that's working with Bieber hollers, "One shoe is too big," I was done. And then the song that they did of the Black Eyed Peas, you know, "Everybody poops, and if you don't, you're an android and must be destroyed." That was great music. But the real thing, not so much.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to work on it. But I'm always going to be a rock and roller or a straight up old school country or a bluegrass guy. I don't think I'm ever going to, you know, a real rhythm and blues, you know, real blues, real jazz. You know, this.
You want to feel like you're in the Twilight Zone? Guess who turned 70 last week?
Who?
John McLaughlin.
No kidding.
I mean, that's crazy to me.
The Mahavishnu Orchestra, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's insane. That just goes to show you how fast things are just completely flying by.
Well, that makes me wonder how old Aldi Meola and Paco de Lucia are.
I almost want to wiki that and see myself. I'm guessing they must be right up there in the 60s.
Well, and by the way, an update coming in from your brother in the fraternity of David.
Yeah.
David in Tennessee. Eddie Van Halen has lost 50% plus of his tongue and some other bits and pieces to stop cancer. David says, as I hear it, he's living something like he did when he brought on his various health problems, chief among them, he's smoking again. Not good. But he says, I hear the band can still do it the right way. The big, big question mark is Roth. If the tour can afford to keep him away from the band except for on stage, it stands a chance on that aspect. Roth, if not taking care of himself, will blow it up. He gets back into heavy consumption, all bets are off. David Lee Roth has collapsed the last two tours of his due to his appetites. If David Lee Roth needs money, that is completely insane. It means he's wasted trainloads of cake. Reason being, Van Halen was like punk bands. They credited all songs to all band members equally for writing. They did it to stop all conflict and have all involved thinking band, not self. That lasted through like the first three albums. So, if David Lee Roth blew through 25% of the writing royalties of the first three Van Halen albums, he's a bloody idiot.
Well, I'll tell you something. If after the tour and after all of this, he really should get into the world of storytelling, because he has such an ability for storytelling. It's unreal. It's so vivid. I mean,
if he, as David notes, is not giving in to the urges to appease his appetites.
Well, I'll tell you this. I would be all for if he was giving in to his appetites to tell those stories as well.
Yeah, but the thing is, the tour won't make it past the 2 month mark.
Yeah, I see what you're saying on that. Yeah, I mean
he'll go down the road of, you know, George Jones and you know George was the one who got labeled No Show Jones because he'd be off God knows where somewhere, you know, with the long neck of a bottle of Jack halfway down his gullet. So
we'll just have to wait and see how it all plays out. But
it would be a great show to see if they're all banging on all eight cylinders.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, a lot of people are looking to wait and see. You know, a lot of places that they never played before and stuff like that. It really is just the whole they never thought it would happen type moment, and now it's happening. And I mean, I can't imagine the pressure. Holy shit, I can't imagine the pressure.
And see, Jack in Shreveport's writing in, David, and he says, I could easily enjoy both Kool and the Gang and Van Halen. I also wouldn't classify Van Halen as metal. And Eddie Van Halen had an innovative guitar style. So
yeah, I understand that, but when you bring in the hard rock, I've gone to those types of shows where they mix the bands, and believe me, Bob, it really is a fine line. You do walk a corrosive type line, because I remember going to Lollapalooza, and there was such a reaction when Tribe Called Quest was playing on the stage. I specifically remember Q-Tip saying, "You know what? Some of you guys need to shut the F up. I don't care if you don't like hip hop. Smashing Pumpkins is coming on at 9 o'clock. We're going to do our set. And if you don't want us to do our set, we're just going to sit here and be quiet. And we're just going to spend the time until our set is over. But we're going to stand on the stage until everybody shuts up."
Well, I remember REM telling the crowd in Morgantown, West Virginia, thousands of years ago. I remember REM telling the crowd to shut up and listen to the songs.
There does seem to be this.
And it was a friendly crowd.
You know what's happened? It's really, really bad what's happened in concerts, is the fact that the attention deficit disorder has hit to another level when you bring in the phones.
Oh.
Everything. I mean, it just destroys the whole show. You see all these phones lit up and people looking at them. And then, like, saying, "Oh, I got to call somebody to tell them."
You know, it's been so long since I've been to a serious concert.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, an arena show. I've been to some shows, but to go to it, no. I go back so far that I remember, you know, the Bic lighters coming up, and you know that was part of it. But seeing, you know, 20,000 people raising up iPhones to try to get grainy ass video with bad audio, so they can go home and post it to the YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Ron and Raleigh noting Al Di Meola is 56 years old, which means he must have been a baby when he cut Race with the Devil on Spanish Highway.
Yeah.
I have to. Ron says, "I have to listen to bad hip-hop from Gangsta to some of the worst crap being foisted on the black community today. The guys I work with are all less than 40, so Ron at least understands what it means to be in the geezer zone."
Yeah.
Ron's no geezer either. It's just... No, there's, I mean, there are people doing great stuff out there.
Yeah.
Part of the whole discussion between David in Tennessee and me about, that wound up being about that high school in Texas that I mentioned, began with noting that Matthew Stafford, who plays quarterback for the Lions, looks like, a separated at birth twin for Jason Isbell, you know, who used to be with the Truckers and is now out on his own doing magnificent, amazing work, and it went from there. And I mean, like I said, there's great music out there being done. I'm kind of out of the loop, I guess. But you know, I know that I can't turn on the radio and find it, because you know it's all just commercialized crap around here. So I'm kind of in a hole. You know, would I find out if I subscribe to Rolling Stone, or is that like the AARP journal now? I don't know.
You know, Bob, I'll send you a group that a lot of people are really excited about. That they call them a South African Pink Floyd. They're called JKSS, and they're really interesting. They mix a lot of the African melodies with a lot of the psychedelic rock, and it's pretty cool stuff.
Cool. I'd like that.
All right. Well, as always, Bob, it's great talking with you.
Oh, and by the way, I have to tell you,
Margot
received her copy of Cave of Forbidden Dreams. She sent me a note to let me know that it arrived, and she was looking forward to viewing it, so I expect we'll hear back from her when she does.
To quote the in-laws, the eagle has landed.
The eagle has landed.
All right, Bob.
All right, take care, David.
Yeah.
Bye now. David calling from Tennessee. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Tracy. How's it going?
It's going great. Before I forget, I was at the store, and I was about to buy that rum that you were telling me about, but I couldn't remember the name of it.
Barbancourt. Barbancourt.
Okay, so it was the right one. I just didn't buy it. I'm going back tomorrow.
Yeah, it's spelled, and they spell it R-H-U-M.
Okay, so I saw the right one because there's a liquor store in the valley, and they had it on sale for $22, plus the 8-year-old one.
Yeah.
The dark rum. Plus, it had a glass that you could do the metal ink. You know, you can do this with the stick, so you can do, you know, mojitos.
Oh, nice.
$22, man. I'm like, oh, I am so, because I was going to buy it.
Well, now listen, Tracy, listen. Don't buy it unless you are willing to never, ever again be able to be within a city block of anything by Bacardi or Ronrico or any of that well rum.
Captain Morgan or...
No, and if you ever decide to really treat yourself and move up a star, because they do it by stars on the label, move up by a star or two, you're... I'd just assume the really upscale, which is not that expensive, the upscale Barbon Coorette, I would as much prefer to have that as a glass of cognac.
Okay, because I'm not a cognac drinker, but I get the analogy. So okay.
Mellow, smooth, doesn't need Coca-Cola. You know, to make a Cuba Libre or anything else with the regular Barbon Coor, it works perfectly, but no, you wouldn't want to dilute the older stuff. No.
Okay, because see, my thing right now is beer and rum. I guess I'm planning on trying to go somewhere very tropical, and I need to make sure I'm ready for when I go. Oh, speaking of beer, there's a brewery in Louisiana called Abita. Have you ever heard?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Well, I'm new to the whole rum stuff and the beer stuff, but they have this beer called Purple Haze.
Yes, I've had it on a number of occasions.
I'm loving it. It's sitting in my refrigerator right now, courtesy of Desmo, chilling in the fridge, and I'm like, see, it's the simple thing, you know, because we've been...
Oh, yeah, and you know, you've got that nice bottle of Barbon Coor there. It doesn't mean you've got to get to the halfway mark on the bottle or even, you know...
A little
snifter, a little rocks glass, whatever, you know, a couple of fingers, horizontally, not vertically, and, you know, it's just a nice kickback.
The thing is, you know, if we actually sat down and thought about the condition of the world that we are in at the moment, it's surprising that we don't drink more.
You know, it is, and... It's kind of funny because you had mentioned that, because I knew an investment guy a long time ago, and he always told me, he said, if you're going to have a serious portfolio, which I don't, he said, always keep some vice stocks in your portfolio, and if bad times if it looks like times are starting to get bad, load up on them, because when everything else goes to hell, everybody wants a drink and they want a cigarette.
Yes, unfortunately, and... You know, I think we would be, you know, become part of Satan's army if we actually invested in, I'll invest in alcohol before I'll invest in tobacco.
Oh, yeah, and frankly, any tobacco that's worth having is A, not in cigarette form, and B, is, generally speaking, not available to Americans.
No, it isn't. It is not. I you know, the stuff that we are entitled to, it's just really, we're Americans and this is the best we can get because of various and sundry embargoes and the like.
Yeah, see, while I was on the Libboat cruise last year, I told the whole story about running around Grand Turk Island trying to find a Cuban cigar because it was the one place that wasn't an American possession that we were going to stop that I'd have a chance at it. And yes, I snuck a bunch home.
Good for you, Dennis.
And it was the first time I'd ever smoked one that I knew, no kidding, I was really honest and for true smoking, because, hey, I got some Cubans, and chances are they were rolled in somebody's bathroom, you know, in Miami with some counterfeit bands and stuff like that. But no, I did learn as a result of that trip what the big deal is about.
Now, where is this? Because that's something that I've always wanted to do, too. I'm not a smoker, okay? But my dream, you know, are the things that, you know, that I'm not supposed to do as a woman or the lady or whatever the fuck I'm supposed to be this week. Smoking a Cuban cigar with a glass, with some rum, you know.
Preferably, well, the way that would work out would be to smoke a Cuban cigar with some Cuban rum.
Exactly, you know. Because, see, you know, my favorite movie... One of my favorite movies of all time is Guys and Dolls. And you know, God help, bless my soul, how fine Marlon Brando was before he turned into the Blob. But with when you watch that movie, see how fine and smooth he is, and when they're in, you know, Havana, and I'm like, wow, man. That just seems like the place to be.
Well, yeah, or the, you know, the Havana scenes from the Godfather movies.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, it was so funny you mentioned that because I consider myself a moviephile, cinephile, whatever you want to call it. I love movies. I mean, basically anything made before the 90s. And so I was in complete and total dismay that my beloved son. And I have failed him, what did my friend say? I said, I failed him as a mother. He's, no, he failed him cinematically because I...
And you know what? That matters in Southern California.
It does. And he had never seen either Godfather. I don't really care about Godfather 3 because I'm like, ugh. It had its moment, but especially the stop part where Sofia Coppola killed him toward the end. When I saw that movie,
you're just hateful.
I don't hide it. You know, I honestly can tell you that in the movie theater when she died, people stood up and applauded.
I know people who refuse to list Godfather 3 as even being related to the Godfather movies simply because of her presence in it.
Just because of her presence and the fact that. You really want me to believe that Andy Garcia is going to go for somebody that looks like her? We're talking Andy Garcia here, okay?
Now you've gone past hateful and you're into downright mean.
Yeah.
I mean, what if she's listening, Tracy?
I love her as a director, you know.
You know, Lost in Translation just ruined me. What a beautiful, beautiful... Because, see, I'm a film nut, too. And I have been failing my children, Tracy... So I've been on this Netflix kick where I'm bringing in old westerns for FERC.
Yes. And see, you know...
But this chaps me. I can't get Shane.
Excuse me, what?
I cannot get Shane through Netflix. Not just not on demand. I can't rent Shane through Netflix.
Hold on. Now, I'm about to look onto this thing, the interweb. Because I have a little place for you if they have it. My son, thank God. You know, it's a wonderful thing to have kids that know how to work the computer.
Yeah.
And...
Well, there's Shane, and then I did... Okay, so I was real proud of the fact that the girls and me and Ferg and Agnes sat down and watched one of my favorite films. And you know, you've got to get over the black and white hurdle, you know.
No, I love black and white. I can deal with black and white. I'm no problem with
Yeah, that. you try to get a 14-year-old to watch black and white. Good luck. Okay. You know, no. So we got over that, and we all sat down and we watched The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. You're going to be so proud of me. I brought in Bad Day at Black Rock.
Oh, awesome.
You know,
awesome.
And because you know you get, and it, you know it's like the conversations we have about sports. You know, movies and sports are the metaphor by which we communicate.
Exactly.
Long before I ever knew what Bad Day at Black Rock was about, I would be with my father in an automobile. He would drive out to a high piece of ground in Alabama to get the Reds broadcasts on radio. Or I forget what it was, but somebody would say, maybe it was Harry Carey with the Cardinals or the Cubs, but some broadcaster would say, talking about some pitcher getting shelled out on the mound, and he'd say, oh, it's a bad day at Black Rock.
Exactly.
And my dad, because he spoke the language, would sit there and say, my God, it must be bad. And then finally it showed up on TV, and hey, come in here. Bad Day at Black Rock is on. And then this whole world of suspicion and fear that boils out in the form of, you know, because Spencer Tracy and Ernest Borgnine, and wow.
Yes, it would.
And then I got to meet Ernest Borgnine a lot of years later, and that was just cool.
Did you almost fall out?
Oh yeah.
I heard he's an awesome man.
Oh, he is an awesome man. Anybody who would have the good sense to get unmarried from Ethel Merman about 15 minutes after marrying her has got to have something on the ball.
Well, you know, one of my favorite, you know, Ernest Borgnine movies, of course, is Marty, you know.
Yeah.
But he was so ugly and sinister in From Here to Eternity. He was downright scary.
I met Ernest Borgnine and George Goober Lindsay on the same evening. Because they're pals.
Wow. See? Wow. A while ago, I'm driving down the street, and he was in the car next to me, and I'm like frantically waving. I'm like, I'm Ernest Borgnine, Borgnine. And he waved back and smiled. I'm like, okay, I'm making a complete ass of myself. You know, did I ever tell you my, what's his name? Superfly. Oh, God, Ron. What was it, Ron Ely? What's his name? Anyway, I can't think of his name, but years ago, before he got sick and died of cancer, unfortunately, I'm sitting up at City Walk at Universal Studios, and I'm on the most wretched blind date ever to...
Just the way you say wretched.
anyone should ever be subjected to. This is why I haven't dated it forever. It just, I can't go through that. But I'm sitting, I'm sitting at the bar, there's a chair, there's two chairs next to me, and on the other side there's one chair. And he walks up to me and asks, because it was him and a party of three, and he asked me politely if I minded to move over so all three of, you know, him and the two people he was with could sit next to each other. And I said, for Superfly, anything, right? And he looked at me, he's like, you're not old enough. Ron O'Neill. And he's like, you're not old enough to know who I am. I'm like, well, Mr. O'Neill, there's been many a night back in the day when I was in my pajamas and in the back seat of my parents' car at the drive-in theater when we had to put the blanket over our eyes through the few scenes. And he just got such a chuckle from that. He's like, wow. I said, yeah, I mean, even though me and my brother kind of cut holes in those blankets so we can kind of peek through.
Yeah, and by the way, Ron and Raleigh was quick on the draw with, yeah, his name was Ron O'Neill. Apparently, you know, this is something that speaks to a lot of people. Favorite Westerns coming in from Ron and Raleigh. What about 310 to Yuma, The Outlaw Josie Wales, The Magnificent Seven? All of them. And
even a couple of, because I hated John Wayne.
Yeah, but there's a couple fit to watch.
There's a couple, you know, the one that they just remade.
Well, like I said, you know, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Exactly. You know, and anything with Jimmy Stewart, you know, or Gary Cooper. Gary Cooper.
Ferg and I sat down and watched High Noon.
That's it. High Noon.
And I was so bummed out that I... Yeah, Shane is way up on the list, and because he's 16, and because he's at that age where he's beginning to realize, much to his chagrin, that the world is not fair.
Yeah. Wait, is he the one that fell off the tree?
Pardon?
Is that the son that fell off the tree?
Yeah. Yeah. But he'll be talking about something that happened, and he said, and I didn't deserve it. And lucky me, I can do a really bad Clint Eastwood, and I'll look at him and say, son, deserving's got nothing to do with it.
To do with it. Exactly. We live...
And that's an important lesson.
It's an important... You know, being my son, who I mentioned quite a bit because I love him, and he's the most amazing human being in the world, and, you know, only not so much because he's my son, it's because he's the polar opposite of me. He's a sweet person.
No, don't do that.
Well, no, he's okay. Not to say that I don't care about people. I do, to a certain degree. But my son is patient. And my son is kind. And I thank God for him because he didn't turn out like the bitter, sarcastic, evil woman that I...
Nah, he just hasn't had enough time.
No, because we talk about this. I mean, he's 24. Well, he'll be 24 in May. You know, and I was bitter and evil long before I hit my 20s, trust. But, you know, the life that we had with him growing, you know, while he was growing up, and, you know, the things that I went through and us being homeless and all the things, as anybody should well be bitter and just and rightly so, he's not. And like I said, I'm so happy because, see, the world does not need another evil black person.
If you're Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich, the world is populated. You're all evil.
Yeah, true. But see, he's only half black.
Ah.
Have I mentioned that?
Yeah, you may have along the way, but.
Yeah, no, my son is on it, so there's only half of him. he's like an Obama baby. His daddy white. I mean, about as white as white can be. Like German Irish.
No, I was going to say Edgar Winter, but never mind.
But, you know, I look at my son and I have hope because, you know, my son is very intelligent and he's very smart and he sees things better than I could ever see them. And he's always the one, Mom. He's my calming force.
Yeah, let it go, Mom. Let it go.
Yes, let it go. Let Mom, come on, just leave it alone. No, you can't go beating up on white people.
Just thank God that he didn't go to third grade at Beaver Ridge Elementary School in Georgia.
Yeah, because see, when I heard that story this afternoon, when I first tuned in, and I'm sitting here listening to that, sitting in my taxi, thinking, God, I had no customers in my car, going, what the fuck is going on with these crazy ass white people? I mean, and that's what, when my son was younger and I would say stuff like that, he would be like, Mom, you do realize that I'm half white.
Overlooking it right now, son.
Overlooking it. Sorry. You know, and as he got older, he just said, he doesn't even claim being white, half white. He's just black. He's like, my mom's black. My mom raised me.
Well, but you see, there's a point, Tracy. If you're, because I've got a right to opine on this, but if you're half black and half white, and that right there is proof that we're still not over what we went through 150 years ago and hundreds of thousands of lives to sort out. If you are half white and half black in this country, you do not have the option of identifying as white.
You do not.
Here's Barack Obama was raised by white parents, immersed in arguably white culture.
No way.
It's the damn one drop rule, and anybody who thinks that it's not still in full force and effect is not living in reality land.
Well, I think I sent you an email a couple of days ago when we were talking about the race thing and the hues and stuff like that, and, you know, how back in the day, you know, and I'm pretty sure there's still black people who do it, who could pass.
Well, yeah, you did send me that, and maybe you weren't listening that evening, but one of the most fascinating of all of the people who passed in this country is J. Edgar Hoover. There's a very famous photograph from it's a sitting.
Stop. Wait. Pass for being a straight male?
No, pass for being a white straight male.
Excuse me. J. Edgar Hoover has a Negro in the woodpile somewhere?
See, I'm so glad you said that.
A
book was written. He shared a common, somebody will help me, the lady read, lady, a very learned woman wrote a book. They shared a common granddaddy. And what I'm telling you is if you get on the Google and just Google J. Edgar Hoover and click that little button that says images, you will see a photograph of J. Edgar Hoover taken at the age of 24. Okay? And the minute you look at that photo, without trying to be overt or anything, you're going to say, oh, that's a brother. There it is. There it is. I mean, J. Edgar Hoover, 1924.
Ooh. See, is that brother? brought up in Mr. Clint Eastwood's movie?
No, that is not brought up in Mr. Clint Eastwood's movie.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be 25%?
25%, yeah, if you really...
Possibly the only example, the most high-profile example of a person passing, but, you know, what a hidden life he had to lead to do it.
Well, that's the thing, and like I wrote in that email, I'm like, you know, anybody that has been born in this country within the last 100 to 200 years, and especially being, if there's any part of their family is from the South, somebody back in the day passed, okay? And somebody, it's like, there's quite a few deathbed confessions that I would have loved to have been by when grandpappy or grandmammy, you know, and the grandkids and the kids, you know, and with somebody.
See, that's why I think that the Lee family is so reticent, so hesitant to release the correspondence between he and his beloved wife.
Because
somewhere along in the... my darling spouse, should I be killed on the battlefield tomorrow, I need you to understand that one day I slipped out to the quarters and, well, our boy has a half-sister.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, because you cannot... I mean, I look at... Lawrence Fishburne, who I think is a god. Did you see his HBO special, Thurgood?
No, but I need to see that.
Yeah, back to my beautiful, wonderful son who knows how to work the interweb thing. Have you ever heard of ice film?
No.
Okay, I'm just going to say icefilms.info, and when you go, and just remember icefilms.info, and when you get a chance, go to that site, and you'll probably be canceling your cable. That's all I got to say.
Okie dokie.
That's all I got to say. Because pretty much any movie, like that's how I found that movie, I found Thurgood, it's on there. And pretty much any TV show that you've ever cared about watching or missed, like, you know, Geeks and, I can't think of the show, but like Firefly, all those good shows that only lasted one season and stuff like that. But I never
did get to see the whole season of Firefly.
And they
of course, I think I'm still on episode 4 of Mad Men. There's not a lot of TV in my life, Tracy.
Well, that's good. Unfortunately for me, I watch way too much television. I have no, you know...
Yeah, but the problem is that the TV that is in my life is the TV that happens at 6 o'clock in the morning when Agnes gets up to get the kids on the bus and I get up with her. And that means that I'm sort of just starting my little foray into coherence as Willie Geist and Joe Scarborough start prating on about Tim Tebow and John 3:16.
I don't care about sports.
Yeah, yeah.
On the Mountaineers, by the way. God bless them.
Thank you.
But, you know, because I meant to say that the other day when we spoke last week, and I was like, because I'm like, Mountaineers, why is that banging around in my head? Why do I even know who they are? And I'm like, Bob team. And of course, I didn't watch the. Isn't there a game tonight, the BCS, to the Alabama?
Yeah, that's on now.
Is the Alabama?
And with like a minute to go, UConn and WVU in basketball are 2 points separated.
Again, don't these things? You're talking to like whatever. And but my thing is, you know, with Tim Tebow and this John 3, how much do you think is just, you know, why 316 yards? Why not? Why did he just go 317 or whatever? But is it because it was a ploy that he deliberately?
Because the Lord wanted to send a message, Tracy. That's why the receiver who caught that winning touchdown pass that came up with that 316th yard was born on December the 25th.
I'm going to throw up. See, these are kind of things that... And did you say that Tim Tebow is a virgin? Did you really say that?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's what he says.
Well, so he's not married?
No.
Oh.
No, he's saving himself for marriage. He's told us repeatedly.
So you, although he was seen to have been a-kissing on some Jezebel.
Now, tell me this. Now, okay, you're a guy, right?
Yep, yes.
Red-blooded American male.
Right.
And not even a football player kind of star, right?
Not even a star.
Did you get some before you were in, how old is this boy, 20, in his 20s?
What? Yeah, he's what, 24, 25?
And you try to tell me? Even my son finally
won the Heisman Trophy at the University of Florida, where appropriate attire for class is a string bikini.
Wait, you're telling me that this boy went to the university, and I'm not saying that it's not possible. I'm not saying that it's not possible that a young man with the testosterone flying, and I can't say what I really would like to say because even I have some decorum. But it's kind of like, you know, like what Mr. Herman Cain tried to say when the latest woman came out, saying that they had a relationship for all these years and that he paid her rent, and he tried to say that it was not sexual. I'm sorry.
Right. No, I get it, Tracy. That's really and for truly, I do.
I've been in those kind of relationships, trust. And trust me, we weren't just holding hands. What?
No. I'm just thinking about that in the context of Tim Tebow.
Right. Exactly.
But see, he was put forward, and I guess we're running out of time, but his story, you know, they ran the Tim Tebow birth story during the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, you might recall. No, well, you're not a sports fan, so you wouldn't.
Right.
But it's all this story about the miracle birth of Tim Tebow. You know, if you had mama laying that on you every day, every night for, you know, the first 18, you're my miracle baby, honey. All of that crap. I mean, this is Norman Bates material, okay?
I mean, is mama dressed? Is mama still in her dress somewhere in the rocket chair as a skeleton?
Well, no, she's quite alive, and that makes it even worse. I mean, she was in the commercial talking about what a miracle baby he was.
How is he a miracle baby? I mean,
they told me to have an abortion, but I wouldn't because the Lord told me. And there's his daddy saying, I said, God, send me a great minister, and he gave me a quarterback instead. I'm not making this up.
See, this is why I don't watch sports shit. Because,
and so, you know, that's, you know, all of that combines with the business of getting down on one knee and bowing and in the end zone and crap like that. Because, like I said, every time I see that, I think, well, there's one more dead Haitian baby that Jesus was too busy to help. Instead, he had to make sure that he hit that game-winning pass in overtime.
Well, see, that's what, you know, because here...
Because either Tim Tebow's priorities are screwed up relative to what he thinks Jesus is interested in, or else Jesus's priorities are screwed up in terms of what he thinks is worth helping.
And see, I think it's the latter. I don't think Jesus' priorities are screwed up. If you want to talk about miracle babies, then my son's a miracle baby, because let me tell you, and I know you got to go, I wasn't going to have him. I didn't want any kids. I was 21 years old, size 8, and fine as hell. You know, you could bounce a quarter off of my abs, okay? And then to find out I was pregnant, I was gone. I was there, but there was an issue, and I had to go back. And a friend of mine took it upon himself to tell his mother, who told another friend of my church, who went to my pastor, and I come to visit my mother a couple of days later to find out, oh, so I'm going to be, and this is my mother's words to my mother, so I'm going to be a grandmother. Excuse me, what?
Mm-hmm.
But I was pressured into, I mean, now that I know my entire church knows I'm pregnant, what the hell am I supposed to do at 20, you know?
There you go. And there we go. Tracy, great conversation, dear. Have a wonderful evening.
You too, my love.
Bye now.
Bye.
A great start to the week with this Moran Monday edition. Thank you to everybody for your participation. Thanks to the individual who kicked into the Thrifty 250. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go back tomorrow night. And thanks, of course, go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and Coal River Wind. Learn about the Coal River Wind Project at crmw.net. Sign up for the newsletter. Maybe kick them a little donation. Get yourself a cool T-shirt. Save the endangered hill.